Hello, everyone. Welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 145. I am your host once again, Jonathan Metz. Glad to be back after a couple weeks off visiting family. And with me, as always, we have James Jones.
Hey.
John Lindemann.
Yay, yay.
And Greg Lay.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
All right. The show can begin. Very quickly, I do want to thank these guys for holding down the fort while I was gone, and they did a great job. Greg is host and editor, and it was nice to actually, James, I think, talked a little more. I think he stepped up and filled the gap a little bit. I know John is known as the quiet one, but I also wanted to give him props on the Super Metroid episode a few weeks ago. I think John really held his own on that one, too.
Hey.
So just... Great work all around,
so
guys.
So it was great hearing from you, John. I hope to hear from you again in a few months.
Silent but deadly, baby. Silent but deadly.
And the thing, John's so funny, but he just when John says something, it's always worthwhile.
He saves it.
And
I wouldn't say that, but
I would, damn it. And I also would like to thank Nick and Neil, of course, for filling in for me and bringing a little different flavor to the show. That's always nice to hear that, too. So I'm going to go first with new business because I've been out for a couple weeks. I've played several things. I've spent a lot of time on the plane and sleeping on friends' couches and things like that. So not a ton of console stuff, but in between trips and in the past few days here, I've been playing a lot of Excitebots. Now, I know Greg is... Well, we'll get to that.
Yeah, I'll get to it at the appointed moment.
Indeed. John and James, I can't remember if either one of you got this.
No.
I do not have this game.
I do not have it either.
Okay, well, you both should. And frankly, everyone hearing this should get it, in my opinion. I just love it. And, you know, I was a big fan of Excite Trucks, and this is really not that much different. When they first revealed it, I was afraid that it would be dumbed down or just too crazy to still feel like a racing game, really, as soon as I put it in, my fears were allayed, because it is a sequel to Excite Truck. It feels like the sequel to Excite Truck. It definitely looks the same. The controls feel the same. I still think I think these two games are among the best uses of motion control on Wii, and in fact, I would put it over Mario Kart Wii, simply because I don't like using the wheel. I just never felt that comfortable with it, so I prefer to use it just the remote, and thankfully you still have that option in Excitebots.
Oh, so you bought the $50 package with your nice wheel?
Hell no. No, I bought it for $40, and you know, I think
and you
that's,
already have a wheel anyway, Johnny, from Mario Kart.
I do, so. Which I
never have
use,
enough golden
so.
Wheels next year, Logan.
Yeah. You know, how would Nintendo even know if you use the wheel? You could always.
It's
just,
it's just that you don't have
way.
The analog stick in. That's all.
Exactly.
The nunchuck. That's all it means. Isn't
it? Exactly. Really how it affect it?
Unlike Mario Kart, I would not want to play Excitebots with the nunchuck. I think it feels really good with motion control, and because it has all these new gestures that they've put in, and especially because of the way you have all this flight control. You know, when you jump off a ramp and you're in the air, that. Yeah. I think would not feel as good.
Yeah, that's absolutely that was the main observation that I felt with when I played Mario Kart Wii, having played Excite Truck, was that what made the motion control feel more essential in Excite Truck's case was the flight element. You know, controlling your vehicle's orientation in the air and all that. And
of course,
this carries over very much to Excitebots.
Well, I mean, that's really kind of what puts it over the top. You know, just being able to launch yourself way, way up into the air and then kind of while you have that hang time. I mean, the hang time is really what gave me for Excite Truck, I mean, that's really what gave me the feel of the game. That's what set it apart.
Well, and also, it's very much a case of, like, you do have to pick where you're going to land.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, you know, you have to think about that.
You have so much control over it. That's what
and
I
that's
really
and
like
that's
about.
Where the motion control really comes in. It's very much okay. You know, it feels so natural to just say, okay, you know, I see that part. You know, that's where I want to go, and just, you know, tilt it and go down and, you know, descend faster, and then bang, you're where you want to be. It's just so crazy, but it's so free. That's what I always. It sounds like Excitebots is as you say, very much the same. But one thing I wanted
totally
to talk
is.
About. With you, because you played Excite Truck so much, was so apparently there's a certain amount of reuse as far as the tracks goes. There's some of the elements reused again, like there's even certain parts of the tracks that are the same. Have you encountered this? the ones you played?
Not to my knowledge. And I've only played the Excite tracks. I haven't opened up Super Excite yet. I'm working on getting all the S ranks to do that, which is still fairly difficult. I'm getting the feeling that it's probably a little easier to unlock the second half of the game in this one, which it probably needed to be. That was one of my main complaints about Excite Truck, is that most people would never get to see the last half of the game because it's so difficult to unlock it. You know, there, I think it is somewhat of a knock against the game that they have reused some of the environmental themes. There are some new ones in ExciteBots, but they've definitely brought back Mexico and China and Scotland and Finland.
Yeah.
And, you know, I felt that they were probably, I mean, certainly the tracks are new, and, and even, you know, within Excite Truck, there are always new tracks. It's just that they were using a lot of the same art assets. So it's the same environment. Yeah. It still looks like Mexico, but it's a different track. But
well, there
the
was some, there were some were sort of like modifications, like you know, the one with the China one with the wall. There were some which were kind of like
it was like
almost like
paths.
Taking a different paths through the same thing.
But I have to say, you know, it's always been my dream to see robots race across the Finland countryside. So I mean,
you probably never thought that would be realized as well. But yeah.
Well, I think in terms of track design, variety is not an issue. There's plenty of it.
Right.
There's
which
a
is
wide
the main
vari-
thing,
there's a
really.
Wide range of difficulty and complexity in the tracks. And ExciteBot certainly takes the openness of the tracks to a new level, because there are, I mean, even in the first half of the game, I've seen several tracks where there are clearly like three different paths you can take. And, you know, each one has ups and downs. Some of them are more difficult, but, you know, maybe you can get more stars if you pull something off. And some of them are more crowded, so you have to kind of deal, you know, you have to kind of weave in and out of the competition a little more. And certainly your choice of vehicle has a bearing on which one you should probably go with, because some bots don't fly as well and some are faster on the, you know, flat terrain, etc. I think track variety is great, and there certainly are plenty of tracks, but it's an aesthetic problem. There aren't enough environments. And let me say this, if Excite Truck didn't exist, I wouldn't be talking about this, because I think ExciteBots own does have enough environments. But the fact that it reuses a lot of the assets and environments from the first game does make it seem a bit rehashed, even when you consider the new ones that have been put in.
I think that there probably was at least a little bit of rehashing involved, where they just basically said, okay, we don't have enough time to make an entirely new track set.
They're definitely recycling assets. But they're not recycling tracks.
Right. That's a crucial distinction.
Yeah, I mean, they may also look at it like this was kind of this is the game they really wanted to make, so they probably don't really have much of a problem with reusing those. Just like, okay, well, let's, you know, we use these for the first games, let's use them again, modify them a little bit, but, you know, put them into this bigger concept.
Yeah, well, it was a launch title in the first place, so, you know, I mean, they would have been somewhat constrained, so you can imagine them wanting to take another shot.
Yeah, well, I mean, they spent all their time in that game on the music anyway.
I'll address that briefly, in that the new music is better, but it's still bad enough that I've gone in the menu and turned it all the way down, so I still get all my sound effects, but I just usually listen to a podcast or something while I'm playing ExciteBots rather than use the in-game soundtrack.
So if you were just had it going, it's just a droning sound of an engine and an eerie silence?
No, I mean, there are quite, because the game is so crazy, there are a lot of sound effects. Yeah. So, and some of them are audio cues. You know, it's good to know when another bot is nearby so you can go smash it.
Sure.
So, it's worthwhile to keep the sound on, but the music, it's not terrible,
not
but it's bad enough that I don't want to listen to it a bunch.
Sure, I could see. Are you got in any time with the online yourself?
Very little. I just haven't, I mean, from what I played, I was pretty impressed by it. I think it's fairly robust. You know, I think the lack of Wii Speak is crushing. It's not crushing.
it's just
stupid.
Yeah, it's confounding.
It just didn't need to happen that way.
Hey guys, look at this new peripheral you have to buy. Oh, we're not going to support it.
Oh, nothing's going to use it. Yay!
You know, it is a first-party game. I mean, I know Nintendo didn't make it, but they certainly have the latitude to tell Monster Games, you know what? we just released this thing. We want you to support it because they are the
fucking publisher. It's going to be in the conduit, and that's coming out not long after this in the grand scheme of things, and that's completely removed from Nintendo.
Anyway, maybe we'll get into that when we talk about E3 in a couple weeks. But I do think ExciteBots is fantastic. It's really, really fun. It's everything that I like about Excite Trucks, and it's just kind of taking it to the next level. It's certainly not a perfect game, but I think for $40, you're not going to do much better. There's a lot to it. It's really fun. And finally, it has, you know, good multiplayer. I mean, the local two-player is still crap. I'm very disappointed that they didn't do anything with that because it was a big...
Well, have they still not got bots in it or anything?
No, it's just
I walked into that one, didn't I, by saying bots, because obviously it's got bots in it by definition.
Yes, AI
opponents.
AI-controlled opponents, yes.
There's no computer racers in the versus mode, and the other thing is you can't play, like, two-player local and both go online like you can in Mario Kart. And I think that was one of the best features in Mario Kart, and it's sad to me that a year later... it's not being copied by ExciteBots, so...
I mean, it is tough, like, split-screen Excitetruck or ExciteBots, I think, because the visibility is more of an issue with it in terms of seeing all the different, you know, little parts of the track, like we talked about, in terms of picking a spot to land.
Yeah.
You know, things like that are much more difficult
in
split-screen.
There's a much bigger play
field,
so...
It isn't an ideal way to play anyway. So obviously, I mean, the online is kind of a big thing, and I'm really glad at least it sounds like they've done a good job with that. But do you think, like, now, you know, obviously we talk about the hypothetical idea of it being cool playing multiplayer, but do you think, like, the formula in terms of, you know, that you don't, it's not all about winning, it's, you know, all this kind of this stuff about, you know, how well you kind of perform is how you, you think it does apply well to a multiplayer game from what you play
well,
to the online?
I just haven't played enough to form an opinion. I think it's a very interesting question, and it's something I'm going to be looking at. For me, the online is probably going to be like the last phase of me playing that. So, you know, right now I'm in the mode of trying to unlock all the tracks and unlock all the vehicles and, you know, experience that part of it. And then when that runs out, unlike Excite Trucks, I will continue playing it because the online is there and it's, you know, it seems to be very well done.
I could see extending the life considerably.
Yeah, I hope it will. I think it will. I think it's a very, very compelling feature, and I'm very glad they put it in. Not much to say about it right now. Maybe I'll have an online report in a future episode, but I do think ExciteBots is great, and I hope a lot of people are going to buy it because it's a really good game, and it's $40. Awesome. Let's see. Gears of War 2, I rented, obviously for Xbox 360, and I enjoyed the first Gears quite a bit, not enough to buy it. I played it well after it was originally released because I rented that one too. And I jumped in the multiplayer a bit with the first game and just didn't care for it. So it just wasn't something I would have kept around.
Yeah.
You know, I played through the adventure and now I'm done with it. Yeah. Send it back. With Gears of War 2, it really was the same thing. I greatly enjoyed the single player. I unfortunately didn't get to play it with co-op. I mean, I think co-op is a really cool feature, and I would have liked to have tried it, but given that I'm playing it, you know, well over 6 months after the original release, it's just hard to find somebody who's willing to play through the entire game with you.
I'll play through
online.
I will, because I have not played through my copy, Johnny, so.
Okay, well, I should have asked you. Yeah. It was one of those things that,
you actually presumed he played it already, which
was
dangerous.
Kind of playing it in between flights, and, you know, it was a game that I kind of rushed through over a matter of 3 or 4 days, and... Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not real long, is it? Like, 8 hours?
No, it's longer than the first one. It's probably about 8 or 9 hours, which is, I think, a very good length. And what I like about Gears... just very quickly, is that the pacing, especially in Gears 2, is significantly improved over the first one. And it just feels like, you know, obviously the core of the game is you hide behind this little wall and you reach over and try to shoot a guy who's across the screen. And it does that very well. And I think part of why that's fun to do is that they give you really interesting weapons, especially in 2. And the graphics and the sound are all built to make this kind of action very satisfying. you know, it's not, it feels like you're really in it. It's very visceral. It's very hands-on. It doesn't feel like you're removed. It doesn't feel like you're, you know, just kind of taking pot shots at some guy way off. And then when he dies, whatever, you move on to the next. Like when you kill a guy, it feels like you've accomplished something, even though you kill thousands of guys over the course of playing through the game. It always feels like you did good.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I mean, where it's kind of separated from your typical first person shooter is that I find that most first person shooters, they reward you for killing somebody from far away, right? Like a lot of times, you know, going up and punching somebody isn't nearly as effective as sitting back and, you know, trying to snipe them or, you know, shooting them from maybe 20, 30 feet away. But Gears of War, it really does encourage you to sit up there, you know, to walk right up to somebody and just beat the crap out of them, which is pretty
cool. You're exactly right. And not even so much with melee, but it's, you know, even with guns, it feels good to get up really close to somebody. And the guns are designed so that most of them lose a lot of accuracy over distance.
Yeah.
And so it's very difficult to kill someone from really far away. So you're encouraged to get close to them. And a lot of times I end up having a shootout with a guy who's literally, you know, he's planted up on the other side of the same piece of cover as I am.
Yeah.
I mean, we are 2 feet away in game virtual space and we're having a shootout, and you really don't get that in other games. You definitely don't get that in first person shooters.
Yeah, and you can't chainsaw people either.
Yeah. You know, I don't use the chainsaw that much, but that's one great thing about the Gears games is because they're third person and they, that's the other thing is, I mean, before Gears of War, there weren't very many good third person shooters.
Nope.
I mean, traditionally it was known as like a shitty genre because all kinds of camera problems, and it just, there was really no clear advantage to doing it in third person except that you got to see your character, which was only important to Japanese people in cultural terms. But with Gears, I think they use the third person perspective really intelligently to give you a kind of combat awareness. So you really know where guys are. You see where the shots are coming from, even if they miss you. And you know how far away you are from the other guy, and you, and based on that distance, it affects your tactics. And I think that's something that does not, it's not easy to get that across in a first-person shooter.
I mean, there's, they really do make a really good use of space throughout the game. It's not just, I mean, with a first-person shooter, it's pretty much just, you know, there's how far away the enemy is really doesn't matter unless they're right up in your face.
Right. I mean, it's funny because both of the Gears games are, on the surface, so stupid, you know, just testosterone packed, dumb story, bad dialogue, cheesy characters that are so out of proportion that it's actually hilarious to look at them. And, you know, over the top gore, people chainsawing through your head. And yet the game design is so intelligent and well thought out. The map designs are so good. It's funny because when you dig under the surface of silly adolescent, you know, gore, that you get below it and the game is extremely well put together and just a very, very impressive piece of gaming. And I enjoy playing through that kind of thing. So again, Gears of War 2, maybe not a game I would buy. I did play the online horde mode, which is kind of a cooperative thing, and that was actually a lot of fun, and I got with a good group of people, and they were strangers, but they were good, they cooperated, they knew what they were doing, they kind of taught me a few things, and I ended up being able to contribute, and I was kind of in the middle of the pack on most rounds, so it was nice to jump into, and maybe this speaks for their matchmaking as well, but it was nice to jump into an online game that I'd never played before and not be the worst person on the team. You know?
Yeah.
Deathmatch, not so much.
Maybe it's
there's a lot of really bad
people at that game.
Well, anyway, yeah, I like Gears of War 2. So, moving on, I did get to play a little bit of De Blob today. This is another rental, and I haven't gotten far enough in to make any kind of criticism of it, but I've beaten basically the first region, I guess. I mean, I got the first transmitter or whatever. It seems like the first chapter is over. And my initial impressions are pretty much what I thought about it from E3 last year, which is that it's very, very charming and, at least from what I can tell so far, pretty vapid. I mean, it seems like a game that doesn't require much skill or thought, and it's almost designed to be played in a sloppy way. I mean, like the way that the character moves is very, it's like he's ice skating. It's really hard to go to like a specific point in the level. you can go near it very easily, but it's like really hard to turn tightly and like go where you want. The jumping is awful, awful, awful. it is truly bad. This waggle jumping, there's no reason for it. There are plenty of buttons that aren't being used for anything important, like A.
Well, it's not like it's prominently featured or anything.
Yeah, there's no reason that you should have to wave the remote to jump. It is, and luckily, it's not, from what I can tell, it's not a really jumping intensive game, thank God.
No, but it probably does get a little more later on, but there's quite a lot of that lock-on jumping. I don't know whether you've done that yet. So, like, the actual jump part of it is not particularly important. You know, like, it's... Because, you're right about it. It's a very relaxed game. It has a profoundly relaxed attitude towards your input on it.
I like. But that doesn't necessarily need to be paired up with sloppy controls.
No, there's no need for that. There's no excuse for that. I just think it's a nonsense. Well, but in terms of, I mean, the point is, in terms of from where you are in the game now, it will change somewhat, but not a great deal.
So is it just flick the remote to get jumping, basically?
That's
yeah,
right,
but
yeah.
Takes a pretty strong waggle to do
because
it.
Well, the problem is that
I'm
if
surprised at how hard you have to do it.
If it were too slight, it would be so easy to jump
by
accident.
Be jumping all
and
the time.
So, I mean, that's why you don't put yourself into that quagmire where, you know, you do
use
have to
the fucking button.
At least as an option. I mean, in the alternative, if you wanted to make it worth something, you could have had something like, I don't know, like almost like, you know, with the accelerometer, that the harder you did it, the higher you jumped or something, you know, then you'd be introducing an element that you didn't
that
just
would
add
be
to the
interesting.
Button.
I mean, that.
But
I
they
could
didn't do
behind.
That either, so.
No.
It really is kind of nonsensical to my
There would be remotes
mind,
lodged but... in ceilings. I mean, it would be a disaster.
It could have been subtle. You know, you could have done it. So it works fine in boom blocks in terms of, you know, your throw being, and, you know, it wouldn't have to be that measured either, probably. But, yeah, it is a shame because I think it undermines the relaxing property of a game a bit.
It definitely does for me. Yeah, like I'm kind of sitting back on the couch. I'm in my really relaxed stance, and you know, I'm kind of enjoying just, you know, brushing up against buildings, painting them. The enemies seem to be very easy, and you know, and then I need to jump, and I have to like violently jerk the remote downwards in order to do a simple jump, and it's like this just doesn't connect. Like the motion that you have to do doesn't match what happens on the screen. There's just a
because most of the time, well,
there.
The way I was doing it was, you know, I was going downwards, which
that's what it
again,
tells you to do.
Not particularly intuitive with going upwards.
Exactly. It's really poorly conceived, I think, the jumping, but. I can see, I mean, the game obviously is not the caliber of Super Mario Galaxy in terms of platforming.
Well,
that's
a hard standard to hold anything.
I agree, but this is, I mean, our website gave this game a 9 out of 10, which is pretty high praise, but I don't like it that much, at least not yet. But I can see how it would fill in the gap of people who want that kind of game. You know, they want their 3D platformer on Wii, and surprisingly, there aren't that many. There aren't really that many on any system this generation.
No, I think I think that's a genre that's kind of fallen on hard times.
Yeah, and maybe for good reason. But the Blob, it does fit into that category, and yet it does some nice things that set it apart and make it feel like a unique experience. And the music is the very top of my list. The music is wonderful in the game. And the graphics are quite good also. So I get the charm of it very much. I don't necessarily like playing it, you know. I don't necessarily like the manual mechanics of playing it, but I'm definitely going to stick with it for however many, you know, 2 or 3 more hours until I beat it.
It'll probably take you a bit longer than that. But also it depends. It's again because it's got this very sort of hands off attitude. The levels can almost take as long or as short as you like. You know, in terms of, you know. Unless you've kind of got a sort of OCD urge to paint everything and to get everything, I think you can just do it quite quickly, so maybe it will only be a few hours. I tended to draw it out a bit.
I'm moderately OCD when it comes to stuff like that, so I won't seek out every last thing, but if it's there and I've almost completed a block of buildings, then I'll probably try to go finish it. At least I will until the game proves to me that it's not worth my while. And, you know, I don't know if that'll happen or not. But anyway, I understand why people like it. I just don't think I'm going to like it as much as people like Nick. But
I liked it as well. But I would put myself in that category also of just somewhat less. But and I mean, it's a question of also, I mean, you know, for the right price or as a rental, you know, I think it's very much satisfactory or more than satisfactory.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because, yeah. I mean, seeing how Nick liked it so much and, you know, the general kind of opinion here is sort of meh. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I would rate mine as somewhat above that.
I think it's good, and it may prove to be very good. I just, I would not count it among the best Wii games of last year.
Yeah.
I just think, like a lot of pretty good Wii games, it seems like a great concept, and they've got, you know, the aesthetic down. They know how to use the Wii hardware to make the game look and sound good, and it seems like a really good seed of a game, and then it just doesn't go anywhere, you know. And there's so many Wii games that are like that. It's like, it's a good idea, and I get why people like it, but what can you do with it? Can you make a full game out of it?
It's like depth. It's a depth issue.
I fear that's what I'm going to feel about Mad World, but I haven't played it yet. That's on my list, and we'll see when I get to it. But it just seems like there are a number of Wii games that are kind of falling into this line of, you know, like really good concepts, good rentals, but it's not that long, and moreover, it's not that deep. You know, it just doesn't really do anything interesting with the core concept. It just kind of sits there. But I don't want to damn the game before I've played more of it, but I just have a feeling that's how it's going to turn out. So, before we move on to James, really quickly, I haven't been playing. I wouldn't put it in that tense, but I did play some Super Ghouls and Ghosts, and I think you guys got the gist of my opinion last week.
I think I actually stated your opinion. Here.
Yeah, you did.
Quite explicit terms, actually.
We were actually
you
did going
quote
to...
me, and yeah. I have no protest to that quote. I did say that, or I typed it. And Capcom is more than welcome to put that on the back of the box when they re-release it for Super Nintendo in 2020. But I just want to maybe elaborate slightly in that
on the F word?
I have played...
Elaborate slightly. Fuck this game!
I have played Super Ghouls and Ghosts multiple times over the years. I played it fairly close to the original release at a friend's house. I didn't get it, but I was intrigued, and I'm pretty sure that I rented it at some point on my own and never made it past the first level. I mean, it's probably one of the few rentals that I actually took back early and wished that they could have given me my money back. So, you know, I went into the game with some bias but from personal experience, and what I did when I downloaded it, I said, look, I'm spending $8 of my own money to play this game for the podcast, and I want it to be good. And I trust from my friends who like it that there are things to like about this, and I really want to seek them out and appreciate them. And so I'm going to try to
He's never
going to
trust
aside...
us again.
Where's the punchline? I'm just waiting for it. There's a whole lot of buildup here.
I want to set aside all the negativity in the past that I've had about this and
whole lot of qualifying.
Poor expectations. And then I start playing the game, and within 5 minutes, I'm ready to throw the controller at the TV screen. I just fucking hate it. I absolutely fucking hate Super Ghouls and Ghosts, and it's still on my SD card, and very likely I will never play it again. And I wish I could gift it to someone who could appreciate it more than I can, but I just really cannot stand it, and I've given it numerous chances, and I just can't give it anymore. I can't spend any more of my life with that game.
Because we all know you'd already dropped a bunch of F-bombs on this game already, so it was basically just a hold on until it came in.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. I understand how people can get used to the controls and deal with them, but I think it is an unnecessary burden on the game design. There are a number of things about the game design itself that I greatly dislike, but I could probably put up with them and maybe even get used to them if the controls were not such as they are.
The game design and the controls are kind of inseparable. I mean, you look at that first level, the whole point of the tidal wave sequence is to create these jumps of different distances to kind of teach you how to do, well, not really teach you, but to force you
to learn how
to do jumps of different distances with it. So the point, you can't really say, Well, you know, the game design would be all right if it controlled differently, because the game design wouldn't really make any sense if it controlled differently.
Yeah.
That, for better or worse, that's how they crafted it, and, you know...
It's tough, just tough but fair.
It is not very welcoming.
I would rather play the... super graphics version, because it doesn't have the double jump, and therefore they can't put that into the level.
It's much less of a platformer. That's the point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think it's a terrible platformer.
Oh, I
really do.
In that respect.
I really cannot stand it. The combat is okay for me.
The other Ghouls and Ghosts is much faster paced, much more of a traditional action game.
My friend Kevin came over to look at it last night because he wanted to see what all the fuss was about. The first thing he observed is that Arthur runs slower than the zombies in the first
level.
He's
really slow.
Yeah,
he's so slow.
It's like we really can't defend it. You know,
everything in the game happens faster than Arthur.
Because you
and
have
so
to kill everything. That's
you
what
can't
you know that.
Really. I feel like I can't really properly react to what's going on, and so the only option is to basically memorize what's going to happen. You know, and I have no interest in doing that. It's like R-Type. I just don't.
It's like pretty much the only way I can react to you, Johnny, is just by saying yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. Every single thing you've said, yes.
It's all true. I just think the biggest, for me, I think, you know, there's no arguing that restrictiveness. There's no arguing that, you know, it's not immediately fun. Probably for almost anyone.
So for the first 6 hours, you'll hate life.
And for a lot of people, it's not going to be fun at all. But I don't. What I would contend is that does not make it devoid of merit. There is merit
in
agree. That game.
I do think there is merit to the game. And like I said in TalkBack, I mean in the retroactive thread, for me, what I get out of this game, what I appreciate about this game, is that it spawned off Demon's Crest or Gargoyle's Quest and Maximo, which are both series that I like a lot. And they're not easy. I mean, it's not that the game is hard that bothers me. I play a lot of hard games, and I'm even good at some of them. It's just the controls. I really, really cannot stand the controls, and those other games don't have that.
Mm-hmm. No, like you said, even Ghouls and Ghosts is different. Substantially different. You know, the arcade game. So, yeah, I mean, it's very, very peculiar sort of thing. But, yeah, I would like to see more of Capcom's latter-day output on the virtual console.
Yeah, so...
Mega Man X, you know, and...
Demon's Crest for Super Nintendo is awesome.
That,
I love
that. Because I never got to play that, but it got really good reviews and just sounds right up my alley.
You would dig it so much, Greg. You would really love it. So, anyway, I respect your nostalgia, and I'm using your in the collective sense, all of you guys and
well,
everybody
it's not,
listening.
But as
who
I say,
it.
I don't think it's purely nostalgia either. But it just that implies that there isn't any merit in it, and the only merit in it is imagined from a bunch of years between when we played it originally.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
I still
not
go
that. I just think that I think the merit existed back then, and you picked up on it at that time. I don't find that there's a lot of merit that has endured the years. That's what I'm saying.
But to me, what that implies is that the only sort of ability for you to recognize it being good is just with it being in the past. Whereas I could play it now and still recognize that it has good things about it. Whereas some games I've played that I might have liked when I was a kid, I'll play them again and say, well, all there is nostalgia because this is only good.
Yeah, this is crap.
Yeah, there are a lot of games that when you go back and play them, like, Jesus Christ, why did I love this game?
Yeah, wow, I must have had a lot of time.
Whereas
on my
with
hands.
This, I could still appreciate it in the contemporary sense, even though that's still strongly informed by my experience with it. There's no separating that.
Yeah, and I'm being polite because I could have easily turned that into a John joke. So we're gonna.
Well, I'm struggling to express Dick. Why I think you guys like it. It's easy for me to express why I don't like it, but all I'm saying is I'm not so self-important that I say if I don't like a game, it is therefore bad, because I think there is a quality that is, outside of our personal experiences. Evan's talked about this previously, but all I'm saying is I admit that I don't get this game, and unfortunately I have put forth honest effort to get it. And multiple times, and it's just clear to me that I will never get it, and so I just have to move on.
To me, there's no presumption in favor of this game.
No.
In my opinion. Because to me, it was restrictive and weird and sort of like inaccessible then. now.
Yeah, it's now. Well, it basically did something that was bizarre then, but years of convention have made that even more bizarre.
So, you know, that's it's one of these weird things where I believe in there are qualities in the game that are very much tempered by a lot of bad things. They're definitely, but at the same time, I just don't expect that most people would like it. When I say most people, I mean most, you know, gamers. Most gamers that play those sorts of games in general.
I can't really identify what the quality is in a person that allows them to appreciate this game. Because it's not that you enjoy difficult games.
No, because it's not really about that.
It's something much more nuanced and specific to this game.
Yeah, part of it, I thought about that while I was playing, and, you know, part of the enjoyment I get out of this game is just being able to pull it off.
Yeah.
Like, just because some of the stuff that you are faced with in that game, you're just like, oh my god, I can't believe I just did that! And you just, you know, no, all yeah. this I mean, kind
if of you,
crazy
if
shit
you
is
do
happening.
Some crazy thing where you end up doing a double jump and sort of avoiding two attacks and then coming down and then hitting him with the lance straight in the face just before he was going to get you, and then, you know, I mean, that's
orgasmic.
You know, that is rewarding.
Yep.
You know, because it's like anything, because it is so restrictive, if you then actually accomplish almost improbable feats within those constraints, you feel as if that is, you know, quite a skill.
And it is restrictive, but I think that once you adapt to the conventions of the game, you don't the amount of how restricted you feel is greatly tempered by you've adapted to it and you're able to control the game within its own confines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's always gonna be. And this applies to me as much as anyone else. There'll always be a time where you realise you've overshot a jump, and you are holding down left on the D-pad for your dear life, and it is not going to do jack shit. You are dead, and you will absolutely hate it for that in that moment.
Well, the weird thing is, just today before we started recording, I was on the forums talking about Star Tropics. And I found myself, you know, as I wrote about it, I looked back on what I had written, and it reminded me of a lot of the things you guys have said and written while defending Super Ghouls and Ghosts. And it's like, you know, there are a lot of similarities in the way the games control, in that you kind of have to plan moves out before you do them, or an enemy will, like, catch you and, you know, fuck you up. And, you know, the game is, the controls are much maligned, maybe for good reason, but I'm sitting here telling people in the forums that, you know, the controls are clearly limited, but the game is designed to match
around
up with
those
that,
limitations,
and so they go
yeah.
together. It's almost repeating verbatim some of the arguments you guys have made for Super Ghouls and Ghosts, and that's why it's odd to me that I don't like this game. In fact, I vehemently dislike it, because clearly I do have a taste for games that share some of these traits. And so that's why it's just very hard for me to identify what it is about the game that, you know, that makes some people like it and some people not. And that's why I go back to nostalgia and I just say, I didn't like it as a kid and I don't like it now. I did like Star Tropics as a kid and I do like it now, because it's hard for me to find anything else that can really set these things apart, you know?
See, I think part of what makes people either like or hate this game, in many ways, even though Johnny's played a lot of times, may come down to your first playthrough. If you sit there and you just take the beating it gives you and eventually adapt to what the game wants you to do, I think if you come away with that good impression, you'll be like, okay, I can do this.
Yeah, because I played this at a friend's house the first time, I probably turned it off after 10 minutes.
Yep.
You know, when I could see that I wasn't making any progress, I was like, fuck this. Yeah, I have no reason to keep playing it, you know. Let's do something else.
Super Ghouls and Ghosts build self-esteem. You heard it here first.
Yeah, maybe.
I believe in myself because of Arthur.
I think if you can play this game well, if you go through the training that it requires, I think it'll make you a better gamer.
Yeah, I think
absolutely. I'm gonna have my kids play it right out of the womb. I mean,
John's gonna have his kids taken away for child abuse. What do you mean you lost Arthur's golden armor, bitch?
No, you got the green armor, you little punk. Go to your room. Go to your room now. I'm gonna get the gold armor. Get the hell out of here.
It's just like the Jackson 5 of gaming.
Honey, you're being too old. Shut up.
Tito, use the dagger! Use the dagger!
Okay, well, since I talked for so long on my new business, we're going to take a quick break for us and for you, and then come back with everybody else's new business. So, see you in a sec.
Hello there, radio fans. It's me, Carl Castaneda, your old host and occasional guest here on Radio Free Nintendo. Greg's been kind enough to tolerate another one of my commercials to promote my new podcast, Talk 112. Now, by this point, you've probably already heard me wax poetic on its higher qualities a couple of times, so I'll spare you the cheesy dressings and get right to the good stuff. Things like this.
And then we play my number one Mario Kart 64.
Nice. Fuck it, what would you do while you were playing it?
I would also, alright, have my fort, have a boombox, inside the boombox, Big Willy style, track 8, Miami, on repeat, endlessly.
Yeah, but what level would
Hooba Troopa Beach!
Fuck yeah, all right. Miami.
Bam, bam, check it out.
Yeah, that happened. So did this.
I couldn't have been more than a few plugs from finishing. When I spot the door.
That phrase, a few arms. All I picture is just like. Like a fun jam.
This queen.
Oh, no. Okay, I'm gonna predict that the bomb wants the wrong
effect. You know, it's because of situations like this that we can never go back to that petting zoo. Again, it's Talk 112, TAWK-112. You can find it at iTunes or your podcast aggregator of choice every Tuesday. But enough about me. Let's get back to the guys.
Okay, James. It's your turn, man. What you been doing?
So I had alluded last week that I started playing GTA 4. And I've played that...
Have you quit yet?
No. Yes, but for a review game, so it's defensible. But
okay.
I kind of agree with what came up in the conversation about GTA 4 a few weeks back, in that the game is really dark. I mean, in tone, it's a very dark game. And
I think it's visually dark too.
It is very fucking dark.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It can kind of be not emotionally taxing, but just mentally taxing to play a game that is overall that dark in theme.
Yeah.
Because
an 80-hour Schindler's List.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times it's just like, all right, I'll go kill that guy. And it's like, why? Why are you going to kill this guy? Is there a real reason for you to do this besides, I'm going to kill him?
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. The thing is, too, it's like later on in the game, the kind of comic relief, you don't really have too much of it. Because I mean, early on, you know, you're there with your cousin,
yeah,
and he's pretty funny, and then you meet the guy that always works out,
Brucey.
Yes, Brucey, who is hilarious, yeah. But he's gone. I mean,
yeah.
So
I've reached the point where the comic relief has started to back off,
mm-hmm.
and it's, you know, the comic relief wasn't sufficient for the tone of the game to begin with. Like they still needed a little bit more considering how dark it is, but with that starting to go away. The game's just becoming oppressively dark.
Yep.
And I think that's so much better in Chinatown Wars.
Yeah.
Yep.
It is so much funnier. And every character in that game is funny, including your character. And there are jokes at your character's expense in that game. So basically the entire game comes down to, in GTA 4, of Nico being all emotionally scarred from the war, but then being willing to go out and just shoot random people that he doesn't really know because somebody told him to.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, we did terrible things in the war. I'll go kill that motherfucker I've never met.
Yeah, I'll go use my flamethrower on a prostitute.
It doesn't make sense.
Just because you can write a character and portray a character that is serious and complex and has a backstory and has morality issues, it doesn't necessarily mean you should. And I just feel like it doesn't fit the game.
No, the game is so over the top and absurd. I mean, why are you going into all this philosophical, metaphysical crap? I mean, come on.
Well, they could have done that, but they would have had to have shown some complexity in his actions with respect to the missions.
Mm-hmm. That game has so many tone problems, mismatched tones. The things you do don't match with the things that they say and the things that you see and the things that you feel while you play the game. It's just so many problems with tone. And it's a you know, it's this kind of thing that's hard to pin down. It's hard to explain, but I just found that the game to be very joyless after a while. I was not having fun playing it. I kind of wanted to see what happened next, but I just could not enjoy myself playing it. And there's some game design parts of that also, but a lot of it is the storytelling and, you know, the tone of it.
It's characters. It tends to take itself a bit too seriously.
Yes. And then it doesn't take itself seriously at all in the missions.
Yeah.
Right.
The missions are basically just kill. I'm curious to see if they resolve that issue in The Lost and the Damned. Because clearly they
one day I may know. It's still sitting there.
Another one on the virtual pile of shame.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For me, there's already too much of GTA 4. That game should be at least 10 hours shorter. And so I couldn't imagine spending $20 on another 10 hours of GTA 4.
That's the last thing I want. If the tone is better matched like Chinatown Wars, I'd have no problem buying 10 more hours of that game.
I really doubt that it is.
It sounds like it might actually be grittier.
Are you serious?
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if the normal game is as unremittingly bleak as you make it sound, then I can only imagine.
Put it this way. Everything in that game is gray, physically and emotionally.
Mm-hmm. It's just very fatalistic, and it matches up with the Nico's character and the part of the world that he's from, because that's what people are like. But
by the end of the game, you're just
enjoyable.
Like, okay, I get it. I get it, Nico.
Nico's a dark,
I just get
troubled
it.
Soul. Stop.
Yeah, it's just enough.
So, what is this Rune Factory Frontier? Is this a review game?
It is a review game.
Is this for Wii or DS?
It is a Wii game. There is a Rune Factory.
I heard good things about this one.
Yes, Rune Factory began as a Harvest Moon spinoff on the DS. So it was Rune Factory, a Harvest Moon story, I think is what it was called.
Yeah, they wanted to make that clear that it was connected to the
Harvest Moon. Yes, well, they have completely abandoned connections in this game.
Oh, I guess they feel it's sort of rooted now.
Yeah, so it's kind of strange because I don't even see involvement of the Harvest Moon teams in this game anywhere in its credits. So I'm kind of curious what the payoff was.
Well, maybe
there.
They were busy making Little King Story, because it's a lot of overlap with that.
Oh, but so it is the basic Harvest Moon premise, which I assume we're all familiar with. You run the farm, or you come to a town, somebody gives you a farm because, you know, oftentimes people give you large tracts of real estate when you move to a town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The farms effed up beyond belief, you know. There's like trees that have grown in the field and someone has bothered to chop them down but left the stump around. Boulders in the middle of your field. It happens. You know, sometimes you run the farm, trees grow, you're like, F out.
There was an ice age at one point, James. Hello? Boulders got moved around?
Yes, but the farm actually was built around the boulders and the trees. The trees didn't come in after
the fact.
I'm just saying. You spend a lot of time clearing your fields and planting crops and figuring out what to plant and tending to those fields. And
then you go kill some monsters, right?
Yeah, but then they introduce this mechanic in the Rune Factory series.
There's always a mechanic.
It's a mechanic. Yeah, it's a relationship mechanic.
With what?
That's
with
good
a,
recall
with a
for anybody who remembers that one. Then you go into these caves, which is new to the game. Well, there were caves in the other game, but you didn't go kill things, that are full of monsters. Because, you know, if there's one thing the relaxing series of Harvest Moon lacked, it's monsters. So, basically, you don't have to do this. I mean, this is all optional. You can do whatever you want in this game. But you go into these caves that are populated with monsters, and you kill them.
What do you accrue from this?
You accrue nothing. You accrue parts to build more weapons to kill more monsters. That's what I've decided.
Really? Oh, you don't even find seeds or money
that
you can
buy
equipment?
What you do find in these caves are fields. So in these caves, there are fields.
Oh, you can farm inside the cave?
You can farm in the caves.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, of course.
Because the caves each have a season assigned to them. So like
you couldn't even do that in Pikmin.
The green ruins, too.
No, certainly not.
The green ruins are in spring cave, so you can go plant all your spring plants there.
Wow.
Now, of course, they're horrible. Some of them are horribly out of the way, and there is a time basis on this game. You know, you do have to cover distance because it is days, and you can get exhausted. You have a fixed number of activities you can engage in. So, like, if you hoe the field, you lose some of your stamina for the day. And when you run out, it depletes your health. And when you run out there, you basically die. And by die, I mean you wind up in the clinic. You've lost half of the next day, and you only have half stamina, which is not a good day in general. So there's a very limited amount of stuff you can do in a day. So to farm, to go cave exploring, they're kind of mutually exclusive. You have to do one or the other. And on top of that, there's the standard Harvest Moon stuff of enhancing your property by buying additions, you know, acquiring animals, which in this game you do by charming the monsters. So I have gotten a cow beast from a cave. So it's just this beast that was trying to kill me that I got by petting it. That I now
okay,
milk.
Wait. Okay, there's two possibilities here. You tell me which one it is. Either there are evil farm animals in these caves, or you have crazy demonic monstrosities roaming the fields of your farm.
Both. there is madness. So in one cave there are these cow monsters. Oh,
there are also there are cow monsters in Little King's Story as well.
Oh god! But are there chicken also, monsters? Are there
I
goat monsters?
Four chicken monsters.
there is also a monster that is a dude. It looks like a guy in a tuxedo with green skin and a top hat who shoots magic bolts at you. You know, it's crazy.
So on your farm, are you like gathering milk from giant lizard men?
From cows, I guess. Yeah,
you're collecting eggs from cockatrice.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what it's going to come down to. I just got my first pet, so I haven't really worked with them yet. But I think that's what it comes down to. Yes,
this is fascinating. Really is.
I think you do milk the giant cow monster. I do think you milk him, and wow. And I am deeply disturbed at the prospect of milking the giant cow monster because that thing is frightening me. And I'm pretty sure the milk that comes out of that will be poisonous. But on top of this, you have to do the standard Harvest Moon of you have to get married. And of course, they didn't give you the choice of gender because that way they can release Rune Factory, the girl's story, whatever they did with the
Harvest
Moon games on the GameCube.
But, like Pocky, make it for boys and girls.
Yeah, so there's basically a bunch of eligible women around town that you got to cruise around and schmooze with until you find one to settle down with. So, yeah, you have to learn their personality and how you can best woo them.
At least there's actual courtship in the game, unlike Dragon Quest.
we just bet the wenches.
Well, one of them, she likes turnips. Okay.
That's not all she likes. You'll find out later.
Basically, I harvested an entire field of turnips and just stood there for half an hour giving her turnips. Just take this
Dude,
one.
Dude, she fucking loves
one,
them.
Take this one. And she fucking loves me. She's like, you are the best motherfucker I've ever met. This is a ton of turnips. I'm like, should I really be giving this woman turnips over and over again in church? This just doesn't seem right. But I just kept doing it right in the middle of the sermon, giving her my turnips over and over.
And when you're not giving them to her, you're like kind of whispering in her ear, hey, turnips.
I got some turnips with your name on it right here, baby.
Oh, the things I'm going to do with you and turnips when we get home.
Just for you. I mean, the game is just, there's just, it's just kind of weird if you think about it. Everything
Just
game,
wait until you get to the Medusa husbandry.
Oh, God. But see, my issue with this game, and it's an issue with the Rune Factory spinoff, I guess, is that the Harvest Moon series was kind of always known to be, you know, it's, you play it, you relax, you just kind of sit there and, pardon the pun, veg out while you play it.
Mm-hmm.
But in this game, the addition of the dungeons and things, now it's less just this relaxing calm, more like, I don't have the stamina in my character to do this. I have to do all his morning chores, wait till the afternoon, go take a bath in the bathhouse, yes, regain his stamina, and then go do evening chores. So the game's lost a little bit of that calm vibe that the series
Little known fact, this is how slavery got started.
It is somewhat similar, yeah. I'm not sure what the best way of describing this game is. It is a Harvest Moon game, and you can play it like one if you so choose.
I tell you, it's a podcast goldmine.
It is, unfortunately. but
it's also a dungeon crawler.
If you choose to play it like that, you will not get animals because they're in the fucking caves because cows live in caves. And if you do choose to play it more like a dungeon crawler, you're going to find that it's an underwhelming experience in that respect.
Okay, well, listeners, look forward to James's review of that.
In 6 to 8 months.
Yep. John, you got the E's? Are you into the E's? Are you the easy E?
Yeah. Easy.
That was the least enthused yeah you've ever given.
No, nobody move. Nobody get hurt. Yeah, I got the Legacy of Ease Book 1 and 2 on DS. It was, you know, on cheap. It was one of those Amazon sales, $20. And Nick actually gave it a good review. He gave it an 8 out of 10. I think that's pretty much fair. I've played the one on the virtual console, so it was kind of interesting.
You bought it again.
Yeah, I actually did. Well, you know, there's kind of a story behind it because, you know, we get PR emails from companies. And so Atlas happened to send us a PR email about Ease Book 1 and 2, the release. And lo and behold, in the PR write-up is a quote from our own Nick DeMola. So I was like, nice. You know what? Fine, Atlas. You will get my $20 for putting that quote.
They're just going to send out, quote, press emails to every site out there with a quote from their site's review of it.
This is Paola at its finest. I'm like, damn it, Atlas. Fine. I'll buy your product because you put my boy's quote on there.
Wait, John. I have to correct you real quick. This is actually reverse Paola. Paola would be them paying us to talk about their game. This is you paying them for us to talk about their game.
John's attempt to prove that statistically games that have quotes on them sell better. It is one copy. You know, is it going to filter through the noise that, you know, put our quote on there? And that's money in the bank.
That's right. You are guaranteed one sale to Mr. Well, John Lindemann.
Just think, if they quoted me, just imagine how much money I would pay. I mean,
John would buy six copies of the game to have his quote on there.
NintendoWorldReport.com, open quotation mark, review pending, close quotation mark.
Hey, I still haven't bought Puzzle Quest for PC, and my quote is on the front of the box.
So I have purchased this on both Virtual Console and DS now, and I was actually surprised. I thought it would be more of a straight port than it was. They've actually kind of given it the Square Enix treatment, and they redid the whole thing in 3D because the one from the Turbo CD, it's very, very basic. It's, you know, completely 2D overhead, your typical walking around the landscape kind of deal. They, for the DS version, they put it into 3D, and actually the backgrounds are okay. They're kind of bland. The saving grace with that is that it does control really quickly, so you know, you walk around the world and it's really smooth and quick and fluid.
Well, the map screen on Turbo CD looks like it was done in paint.
They've given it
like a good upgrade.
Yeah, they really have given it a considerable facelift. I mean, if I remember correctly, I believe that on the DS version, there's like an entire, you know, several minute video intro that's all anime. And that's not in the Turbo CD version, obviously.
There is one at the beginning of book 2.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's one at the beginning of book 1.
Yeah, this one's at the very beginning.
Okay, so it's probably new.
Yep.
So didn't they change the controls so you have to push a button to attack? Because that would be a big...
No.
Seems like a big change.
No, they haven't done that. Maybe
I could have sworn I read about this. Are you using the stylus control then?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why you haven't...
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say, is maybe they did that because you can switch back and forth between the two. I've used the D-pad controls, but I haven't used them in combat yet. So the way combat works is you just walk into your enemy, and you know, it's kind of weird. I mean, it's probably the only RPG I've ever played that's really like that. I can't think of anything else where there's no combat button even to press. You just, you know, toss on your armor and your sword and you just walk into your enemy.
Yeah, but see, they did add a combat button in the DS version. I think that was sort of the controversy, is that the series was known for this style where you just kind of ram into enemies, and then for the DS, when you use the D-pad controls, now you have to push a button to attack, which is kind of
weird,
but yet it's weird for Ease.
Yeah, so I actually played Ease a while back, the original.
Yeah,
and I guess you've now played the Virtual Console one. Would you say this would be worth a pickup for somebody who enjoyed it but it was worried about it feeling dated?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it's considerably better than it's considerably easier to get into. The one thing that I don't like about it, and this might be good, might be bad depending on your play style, but I find that the one on the DS, it's a lot easier. It's just a lot easier, period. What I found is that especially kind of just grinding to get gold is very, very easy on the DS, because right out of the gate, I mean, when you walk out of the first town, I mean, the whole thing is, I mean, you have to get a sword and you have to get a shield and armor. And once you kind of venture out to kind of start actually going out into the world, the monsters that you fight, I mean, you can pretty much one-hit them. And you can just sit there for and you get 10 gold each time.
Yeah.
I mean, you can sit there and just grind very, very easily, and you could not do that in the one on the Turbo CD. I mean, first off, you got killed a lot easier.
Yes, you. I remember that much.
Yeah, it's pretty difficult, and you also don't get the gold that you get. So they've kind of dumbed that down in a sense. So that was kind of, you know, I just have a feeling that it'll be a lot easier to get through than the Turbo CD one was. But on the other hand, the Turbo CD one was probably a little bit too difficult. You know what I mean? Like, they just make it. That was back when they just made games hard. You know.
Yeah, it's pretty hard.
Just to make them hard. But yeah, so it's pretty good. I wouldn't say it's great, but I mean, if you're kind of a fan of those old school RPGs, and maybe if you've, you know, played all of the Square Enix remakes, you're looking to play through, you know, but you're still in the mood for that kind of old school RPG, it's probably a pretty good choice.
If you're looking for like a sort of a fresher remake,
yeah,
then maybe you could do worse than Ease.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, certainly there's better done games, but I mean, the thing is, the one thing I will say about it is the fact that, I mean, like I said, the play style is very different. It's not your typical turn-based RPG, mm-hmm. and that kind of makes it almost more arcadey in a sense. So it's kind of mm-hmm. it's kind of different. It moves along kind of at a swifter pace than probably a lot of the Square Enix RPGs do.
Yeah, it's an arcadey RPG. I mean, I agree with that.
Yeah.
It just kind of sounds weird.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else, John?
That's it. I'm waiting on Dead Space. I'm going to get that tomorrow. I was hoping to have it for the podcast, okay. But it's still in the mail.
You'll like it.
Yeah, I have a feeling I will.
All right, Greggy, finally your turn.
Okay, so let's get the formalities out of the way. Excite Strike Week 3. Week 3 without a release date since it's been out. And, you know, it's just ridiculous. Briefly, you know, let's say, how ridiculous is it? I mean, I'm at the very first episode of this podcast that I was on, we were looking back at the Wii's first year in existence and grading it, and one of my grumbles was that it took like a few months for Excite Truck to come out, and it wasn't.
It takes a long time to translate.
And now we haven't even got a release date yet, so chances are it's going to make the Excite Truck delay look small, which is just, what? This is a disgrace. There's not been very much coming out from Nintendo.
And there's a lot of international wrangling over the licensed vehicles.
Ferrari are really defensive about having their brand thrown on a hummingbird or whatever.
That's right.
Well, look, you can rest assured that it might not be in 50 hertz.
Yeah, Nintendo are good about that. So all good things come to those who wait.
They just need time to add hertz to it. It's fine. Time to add hertz.
So I've had my grumble about that, and I will continue to do so until that is rectified. So I'll get into my play. Been playing on my Japanese Wii, Castlevania 3. So I've been looking forward to playing this for a long time. I really wanted to play the Japanese version because it's got the better music, it's slightly better graphics, because it had this extra custom processor in the cartridge back then. And the music is great. I really love the music. If you're anybody like me, or probably like most of us that grew up with 8-bit games, you just kind of like the sound of 8-bit music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is something that just appeals to you about that kind of instrumentation. The wonderful thing mm-hmm. is about this, that's there, but because of the extra channels, I had like 3 extra channels, it's so much more rich than that music could be normally. You know, you've got things like, you can have like, they'll layer in a little note rotation sequence, or like what Muse are very fond of doing, in amongst, you know, you've still got the melody, you've still got the bass line, the rhythm, and sound effects.
I mean, is it really obvious?
Yes. I mean, Jeremy Parrish did a comparison between the two versions, the NES and the Famicom version, on the Retronauts blog some months back, so you might have to filter through a lot of blog entries on there to get to it, but it's there, and you can see for yourself how obvious it is. It is extremely obvious. Okay. And it sounds wonderful. I mean, it really does. I mean, the music in Castlevania 3 was great anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, what they sort of had... It was sort of written for this original, for the Famicom version, and then they kind of had to adapt it to the hardware limitations of what they did with the NES version. And I think they did a good job of that, actually. But to hear it in its original form, you know, some of the really great stuff like Clockwork from one of the early levels, it's great. And what it made me think is that, you know, with Mega Man 9, they kind of stayed true to the limitations of NES music, didn't they? It was not, they didn't use a bunch of extra channels and all that. So, I mean, that was all part of, you know, like they kept the slow down and the flickering and all that. Yeah. That's fine, but... What it makes me think is that if you had other games a bit like Mega Man 9 in the future, I would just love to hear more, you know, like this, you know, 8-bit music that's really vibrant, because it's just it's kind of neat, and it goes to show that when you kind of marry those that sound that you like, but actually to the complexity, you know, it could actually just create something really cool.
Well, it would be cool if they could take that music and kind of do it still, even though, you know, it was only done because of the extra chip. Still saying, well, technically it's still within the restraints of the hardware, right?
Yeah.
But do it for a completely new game. That'd be really cool.
I mean, you know, I don't see why Konami couldn't do, like, a Castlevania for WiiWare, like a Mega Man for WiiWare.
Yeah, real simple, graphically, game.
Yeah, you know, very much in the vein of the NES game, sort of like that. Mm-hmm. It'd be really cool, do the music like that,
I would rather see them do one targeted later in the series.
Well, yeah, they could do later, but there's a certain, like I said, with this, it kind of shows how much of a sort of charm there is with the 8-bit style if you handle it correctly. So I mean, there's pros and cons with that. With briefly about the game itself, something we've talked about quite a few times when it's been released for North America and all that. I really like it. It's got all the kind of clunkiness of, you know, of the old Castlevanias in terms of, like, some of the later things that you had in Castlevania 4, like your whip directionality and being able to jump on stairs and, you know, sort of being able to control your jump in the air a little bit, and that's not there. It's very, you know, it's still very traditional in that sense, but, you know, it's still, I still find it very playable, as you might guess from liking Super Girls and Ghosts. And
setting the bar pretty low.
And I only really have one major complaint about it, other than it is generally really awesome, is that there's one level quite late on, and sort of there are multiple routes in this game, so it may well be possible to play all the way through it without actually playing this level. But I played it, and basically you wait for a lot of the level for things to fall. That's the level. There's like acid that drops and melts blocks that you have to wait for before you can leave a room. And then you have to wait for blocks to fall to make a platform that you can get to the exit or the stairs or whatever. And this takes several minutes in some cases. And it's just ridiculous. You've built a level around waiting.
Yeah. It sounds very out of place with the rest of the game.
And the worst part is, once you get past this waiting stuff, you've got, you know, which takes a long time and is boring, you've then got some really tough, you know, traditional Castlevania type stuff with the enemies and the boss and, you know, platforming and death spikes and all that. So it's like, when you're trying to learn how to beat those bits, you've got to go through this arduous nonsense of waiting around for blocks to fall on the bloody ground.
So there's no checkpoint after the...
There are checkpoints, but only within that number of lives. So, for instance, if you've got three lives, yeah, and you know you get past the weighty bits without losing one, but then you lose lives, you know, trying to beat the boss or trying to get past this sort of tricky section after that. Once those lives are exhausted, then it's all the way back to the start of the level.
Ah, oh, come on, and Greg, through the weight continues.
So yeah, it's the way the checkpoint system works exacerbates this, but it's just a bad idea the first time. Who thinks a level built around just standing there is a good idea?
And you know, like Super Ghouls and Ghosts, that whole game is kind of built on the fact that you have to keep moving because enemies keep coming at you.
Yeah, the Medusa heads, and you know, there's a lot of... But that, it just stops, basically, you know, and you kind of get locked into just jumping in a certain routine while the blocks fall. And it's just boring, and it goes on way too long, and I cannot understand why that is in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, yeah, really good game. I don't want to complain about it too much, but, you know, it was so confounding. It's like, you know, it's sometimes poor bits in games or games that don't really work, but they don't seem so quite fundamentally, obviously, ridiculously silly as that. But, yeah, anyway. The other thing I played off my Japanese Wii was a Nintendo Channel a demo for the 3D Picross that's been out in Japan for a little while, which is by HAL, actually, unlike the previous one, which was by Jupiter, or they have done like puzzle games for Nintendo in the past. So yeah, HAL handled this and seems to work pretty well. I mean, you're only doing the tutorial and some really basic puzzles, so it's kind of difficult to get a handle on what it'll be like more like. But the interface is really nice. You know, it's very easy to just sort of manipulate the big cube of blocks that you have to chisel away at to sort of solve this puzzle, which is very much like Sudoku, or yeah, as we've said before, if you're not familiar with Picross. And
but it's in 3D.
It's in 3D.
Like it would melt your brain.
It's like I said, so far the puzzle is so simple that you're not really seeing whether it's going to introduce a complexity. I have a feeling that you won't get puzzles that are in themselves anywhere near on the level of complexity of some of the later ones in Picross DS, because they were very big and really quite complicated, and I just think in 3D it wouldn't be particularly manageable. So it may end up being a little easier, but it is kind of a little more complex in a way as well. And just it seems to me like they've done a pretty good job of bringing it into 3D. It kind of makes it a little more satisfying and a little more of a video game, you know, rather than something that is like a pen and paper game. And also, you know, you might think, oh, well, but it's not as immediate with having to rotate the cube of blocks and things. But the thing was, with the kind of way the dimensions worked on the DS, the first game of the DS, was that you had to zoom in a lot on the puzzles to actually sort of, because they sort of have to zoom out to show the whole thing. And then when you actually wanted to make your marks, you'd have to zoom in. So there was a lot of zooming out, zooming in. It was quite cumbersome as it was. So this isn't really any more cumbersome. So I think it works pretty well, and I'm kind of surprised we haven't heard about this coming elsewhere yet, because, again, localization doesn't seem to be a big issue.
Yeah.
But I think the first one sold pretty well, and it seems like there's probably quite a lot more development sort of resources gone into this, just like with the 3D part and the little animations that you get when you do it successfully and things. It's quite polished up quite nicely. So I do look forward to this when it comes out, if it's at the right price. And, you know, kind of very nice travel game, Picross.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's about it for me. I did get Rhythm Heaven, but I haven't played enough of it to really talk about in detail, which is, James, you like Rhythm Heaven. I'm surprised you haven't gone that yet. Why haven't you got the DS one yet?
Just backlog of games I have to get through.
Yeah, there's a lot of good DS games.
Yeah,
it just came out here like this week.
Yeah,
so
I have my list
away.
And it is currently number one on the list of games I'm going to acquire.
Yeah, it seems pretty cool so far, but not really into it enough.
I'll have it by next week so we can compare notes.
Mm-hmm.
It has been an astonishingly good year for DS.
Yeah, seriously, what
yeah.
The
it's not even
what?
It's not even halfway
what
over yet.
What the fuck, man?
Yep, awesome.
Yeah,
I mean,
awesome,
it's a great problem to have, but where the hell did this come from?
Yeah, I know.
Well, it's just because it's such a huge system, you know, and people are bringing, you know, everything they've got. You know, look at, you know, you were talking about EA and then Take-Two and all. I mean, everyone's bringing their best game for, you know, the best system in terms of sales. So.
Gives you hope for a Wii one day.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, yeah.
All right, it's time for a break. We'll be back with your listener mail. Welcome back. Before we get into listener mail, I want to very quickly plug the new retroactive poll. All these games are for NES, so there's no console bias this time around. We're going to play an NES game next time, and your choices are Wrecking Crew, Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link, Star Tropics, Mega Man 3, and River City Ransom.
Yes!
If you haven't already voted...
That's a tough poll.
I
think it's
man.
Tough. I wanted to make it tough.
But see, it's like Super Ghouls and Ghosts. Tough but fair. Tough but fair.
Okay, so if you're listening to this show pretty close to when it was released and you haven't voted yet, please scoot on over to the forums. We really want to know what you think, and we hope that you'll stick around and participate in the discussion there, which will begin as soon as the voting is over. So with that, we now move on to your listener mail. Of course, these are people who wrote into rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We've had some really good letters recently. We can't even read them all. I just want to say real quickly a shout out to the people who have written in with like music suggestions. Someone offered us a copy of Wario Land for Virtual Boy, which we can't really use right now, but we'll file that one for later in case one of us... James already has a copy of it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Exactly. But... very gracious offer, and someone suggested a topic on the 20th anniversary of Game Boy, which of course, you know, we couldn't fit it in because we already had plans for Super Metroid, but you know, we definitely like the suggestions. I like to get suggestions on things that we could do, you know, an entire segment or even an entire show about, so we do appreciate that, and I wanted to acknowledge it. So, on with the actual emails that we are reading today. I have the first one. Plugabugs writes, Henry Hatsworth, a game of almost two separate parts that almost have nothing to do with each other. I love the platformy bits, but forget completely about the bottom screen, then have to rush to clear the bottom screen. Or then do the same with the puzzle bit and forget that there's a platformer in the top screen. The English her effects, sound effects, are grating, so I have to play the game in mute. It's a good game, and the difficulty is chunky. I guess that's a good thing.
Maybe.
But having two opposite things to do can detract from what the game is offering as a whole. So,
that was the reservation I had about the game originally. It was like, why both? What's the purpose of this second thing down here?
I think that's very fair, and I'm now at the final boss of the game, and I still think that is a fair criticism of it, is that
it never quite comes together all the way. There's a few sort of decent ideas for interconnections, but I never quite felt like... I mean, really, in the boss battles is probably where I felt it the most in terms of, like... Because there, it kind of... You are going to take some hits on some of those bosses, and you can use the puzzle to get your health back. You can use the puzzle to power up your attack so you'll kill the boss quicker. It's much more imperative to manage the puzzle, you know, sort of intelligently.
A lot of the bosses will dig down into the puzzle and mess it up and do things down there, and those are the best ideas, I think.
Definitely. So I think in the boss sequences, it's, you know, it makes more sense, and I felt like there was a real complementarity between the two gameplays, and then everywhere else, not so much. But there is, once you've beaten the game, there's gentleman mode, which... It's considerably more difficult, even though it carries over all the stuff you've, like, you know, all your powers and, like, all the stuff you've upgraded with your money. That all carries over, but the game is still considerably more difficult because they've just ramped everything up, like damage and like, the puzzle, it goes so much faster. You will not, like, manage it. You can't manage it that well anymore. Because, well, I can't. I mean, maybe if you're really good at Tetris Attack, you can. But, you know, for me, like, you will get a lot of those enemy blocks coming up into the top screen. And just, you know, there'll be time where you might have three or four of those just flying around. And there's not much you could do because they're just... The puzzle gets kind of out of control. And therefore, it's really hard. And obviously, like, if you hadn't already played the game through, it would be overwhelming. But at least then it's relevant. You know what I mean? Like, it almost feels like maybe their original intent was a little closer to that, and they thought, this is a bit much, so let's scale it down a little bit. And then it kind of ended up being a bit sort of peripheral, apart from the boss battles.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I find it to be more of a chore during the levels, for the most part. It's just something that you have to mind, like farming, you know, or something. It's like something you go and... You know, you water the plant, and then you go back to what you were really doing, which is to play the action game on the top. But it is in the boss battles where the interaction really feels developed, and it really shines.
Here's a question, then. is there ever really a reason why they did it?
Well, I honestly feel like some of the bits in the boss battles, like, really kind of makes you think, yeah, you know, this is a good idea, but they just didn't quite get to explore it as much as they might have done. You know what I mean? It just...
It's also maybe works better on paper than it does in practice.
Yeah, so, I mean
maybe
yeah,
it's just the kind
it's...
of thing they got greenlit early on at EA, and, you know, they had the design doc, and it sounded really cool, and they had some good illustrations, and it's just when you play it over a long period of time, the puzzle part tends to feel tedious.
Well, like I said, because I mean, I think the thing about it is, like, when I was playing it, I would tend to just sort of robotically deal with it every so often. And even though I never felt particularly at risk of those enemy blocks coming up and, you know, affecting me. So, yeah, they never really did. And that pool part of the game was kind of, like, irrelevant. And also, I found that the rate of sort of deterioration of, you know, you've got a fixed amount of time that you can be in the puzzle, was generally so slow that I could be I could be pretty crappy at it and still get what I wanted done. Yep. You know, so... The when you get into this harder mode and you're under a lot more pressure to actually, like, if you have a chance to clear some blocks to prevent an enemy coming up to the top screen, there's much more pressure on you to do that very quickly and very effectively. Otherwise, it'll run out and then bang, it's going to be on the top screen and it is going to be interfering with you. So it just seems like maybe they had more plans along those difficult lines and just in the end thought, you know what, this is difficult enough as it is the first time around. Let's rein it in.
They would be correct. Anyway, the last thing I would say to Plugabugs is that I think it's worth your while to turn the music back up.
The music's great. The music
that's
is
the
fantastic.
It's a very good soundtrack, and the sound effects may annoy you a little bit. I don't know if there's an option to change the ratio of the volumes, but I think it's worth, especially as you get deeper into the game, I think, and also the boss battle against the opera singing muscle guy, you have to have the sound on for that. It's so good.
So how annoying are the sound effects?
I don't think
they're not that bad.
They're
annoyingly funny in the cutscenes, but during gameplay, I don't think they're bad at all.
Yeah, he just sort of goes, hoo, 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 you know,
when he gets hurt.
When he dies, he sort of goes, poppycock, which is really suitable sometimes, because sometimes you will die in a fashion that you feel like calling bullshit on, which is basically what he's saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's, you know, it's I could see it might annoy some people, but I don't think it's, like, incredibly annoying per se, you know, really.
Didn't bother me, and I do think the music is worth hearing.
Music's great. The instrumentation on that is so rich for a DS game, you know what I mean? Like, I've been playing FF4 alongside it, and that's got nice music, but sounds not nearly as rich, you know, in its instrument quality as Henry Hatsworth, actually. So, you know, it's impressive. I wasn't necessarily expecting that level of production value for this kind of quirky little game.
Yeah. All right, James has the next letter.
So, Marla from Kernsville, North Carolina writes, I'm a mom of a 19-year-old gamer. He's been playing video games ever since he was 4 years old. He has a passion to attend college and be a game designer. Do you have any Scotch... Why did I get this letter? Scholarships for gaming students, or perhaps you could help us know someone who does.
Okay, well, it sounds like Marla might think that we're Nintendo. We get letters like that sometimes. It's not totally clear, but...
But luckily for her, we can announce now the first memorial John Lindemann scholarship for
game design. Yeah. So are you saying I'm old enough to be dead, Greg?
Yes.
Well, it's just the silence. I mean, we never know if you're still alive over there.
Yeah. Well, when you're talking about Henry Hatsworth, I have nothing to say. Nothing.
You should, John.
Yeah,
you should
I know.
Yeah, look, come on, it's old school, John.
Very.
You know, I was thinking, like, you know, because, you know, Greg plays, he plays all these, you know, kind of old school
games.
And I was thinking of changing my forum staff tag to, like, you know, Greg is old school, I'm just old.
you're making your own age jokes.
See,
man.
He figures if he does it now, I can't do it.
Yeah.
Which he's totally wrong about. I will still do it.
So, yeah, obviously, we don't have scholarships. I personally don't really know where to go on this. But the reason I included this letter is mainly that I think it's an interesting topic of, like, why people who play a lot of games tend to want to make games, because you can't really translate this to other form, you know, like people who really watch a lot of movies, it's not that common for them to want to go out and become a director.
Well, I don't think it's that common for them to go out there and want to play games.
Well, if you look at like website advertising, it seems like they're really fishing for that.
Yeah,
like,
but
so many game design programs that cropped up at universities all over the country, and
they're all terrible.
You know, they're just maybe they are. Maybe they're not even useful. I don't know. And the other thing is, you hear about all these people who work in gaming media, and you know, things maybe turn sour at the newspaper or the website that they work at, or the magazine, not newspaper. And a lot of them end up in game development.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a more logical jump, because not only is it that they now have experience in doing, not necessarily doing design, but analyzing design, but they also have a lot of contacts at that point.
Mm-hmm. It's a very pragmatic thing with the contacts. But I think, you know, these are people in the enthusiast press. They
right.
are not that far removed from your average gamer. Maybe they can write.
Well, that's an important skill, though. I mean, there have been interviews when people ask, well, how do I get into this? And one of the skills they want is someone who can fucking write.
Sure. But you could say that for any job,
job. They stress that as one of the three things that they think is really important.
Well, that's because they're used to getting people who come out of computer science programs and can't write for shit.
Yeah.
Hey,
you get that in engineering jobs, too.
I can write for shit. That's it.
Of course you can. That's why you work for us. But what I'm saying is, I mean, look, I'm in engineering, and you hear this all the time. Companies want to hire people with communication skills. And the reason they stress that so much is because the average engineer has terrible communication skills.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's just it's a stereotype, but it's because of the academic system and the way it's structured, and, you know, it's just the way it is. But all I'm saying is I just think it's really interesting that, you know, there's so many people who want to get into game design and game programming and things like that purely for the fact that they like to play games. And I just
– It's not the same. It's I mean, it's do you like to build it or do you like to play it? There's a big difference there.
Yeah. My question for you guys is, have any of you ever tried to make a game, or do you have any aspirations to make a game?
I do, definitely. I would like to make a game. But the thing is, I mean, like my response to this is, there's nothing stopping you from making a game right now. There's nothing. And in fact, I would say I was reading an interview with, I think it was somebody like Will Wright or somebody like that, but they were just like, make a game. Just make a game. Mm-hmm. Learn how to program. I mean, because there is no magic key that you can get and like, wow, all of a sudden now I can make Gears of War 2. No.
It's called $1 billion. That's how you get the magic key.
But that's the whole thing. I mean, all these people in the industry, I mean, they just started doing it. They started programming. They started to write design documents. There's nothing out there stopping you from doing that.
Well, there is. And it's knowledge. That's what it comes down to. Do you have the skills to do it?
Yeah,
knowledge and experience. But I tend to think that having a degree in something so specific as game design probably doesn't help in the industry.
There are interviews discussing that where people in the industry have said we get people who apply to those game design degrees and we review the curriculum and we determine that it's not really, you know, a worthwhile stuff that comes out of it.
You should definitely have a college degree if you want to work in the game industry, but it could be in almost anything.
They actually put a lot of emphasis on taking technical classes, so things like programming and stuff, mm-hmm. but art.
Yeah, I mean, it helps us.
Oh, yeah.
It really depends on what you want to do. I mean, if you're going to go into the art department, if you're going to do design, I mean, there's so many ways that you can get into the game industry, but I think the bottom line is basically produce something, you know? Make a mod. Make an Unreal Tournament mod. You know? If you want to go work for Epic, make a mod for them.
So don't make a shitty one, because then they'll laugh you out of there.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the whole thing. If you're good enough, you'll get a job there.
So, in fact, I can't remember what project it was, but didn't Valve hire people who made mods of some of their software simply based on they thought the mod was really cool?
Yeah.
It happens a lot in PC gaming. Mm-hmm. A lot. Well, James, I know you're kind of a computer guy, so, I mean, have you ever considered this?
I have made a couple games. I have considered parlaying it into a career.
Randomly generated dungeon game.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's funny you say that, because one of the games I did have randomly generated dungeons.
Poker James, Mystery James?
It just went on forever. So basically, you dropped in the first room, and every room you exited, there was no exit to the game. I just kept telling people, "Oh, there's an end. Just keep going."
Jones Factory Frontier.
It would go. you have to recruit cow monsters to milk.
And Greg, what about you?
Oh no, I've never thought about it. This is one of these things I love, but not something that's probably within my skill set or just not ambition. Really.
Well, you know, the skill set to make a game. No one person has the whole skill set to make.
No, yeah, so especially today, games are this huge collaborative undertaking. Perhaps
200 people on Gears of War.
More collaborative than any other medium, arguably. Not to diminish the collaborative nature of other media, but you know that it's just a fact. You are dealing with so many facets.
Yeah,
especially you know when you consider. As they try to push out, you know, the kind of narrative boundaries alongside the art boundaries, and then the most sophisticated gameplay that you know that there's been, alongside you know the technical. I mean, there's so many facets to it. As John says, you know, you can be, you know, if you have a passion for games, but you know you're not the most sort of computer savvy person in the world. You know, maybe you could write scripts for games. I mean, maybe you could do a lot of things. I mean, there's...
yeah. So. Just really quickly, my experience is I have made games in the past. I think I've mentioned it on the air before. Like when I was in high school, I did the calculator things. But for me, that I never, ever considered doing it professionally. And in fact, even to go one level beyond that, I mean, doing this stuff for the website, so many people ask me over the years, you know, is that what you want to do when you get out of college? Why are you in engineering if that's what you spend all your time doing? And it was always a hobby for me. And the funny thing is, the more I learned about game development, the more I hung out with people who did this, the more I knew that I did not want to do that.
Yeah. See, it's funny because
such an unsavory industry to work in
It's something that isn't just in game development. It's software development in general.
Period, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. It's just infinite nightmares of work schedules that are unreasonable.
Yeah, it's not glamorous. It's a grind.
Days.
It really is.
Yeah, so if you enjoy working 18 hours a day for 4 weeks, hey, go for it. If you don't,
yep.
Don't.
I do not.
Because release schedules don't get moved all the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes they won't move them hell or high water.
But I do say to anybody who is interested in that, God bless you and good luck.
Yeah.
I'm glad there are so many people who want to do it because it's only good for us. All right, John has the next letter.
Voodoo from Chicago writes, "What happened to former site director Steve Windyman Rodriguez? Before his departure from NWR, he was seemingly absent from the site for months. After Lindy took over, I seem to remember Windy's position was changed to something like staff writer. Now he's disappeared from the staff listing info page completely. No goodbye, it's been swell, no explanation, nothing. Can you give us a skinny, or is the information doomed to remain hidden from the public eye?" Well, I mean, in short, Windy, basically, his family ran into some financial difficulties. And so he actually wound up, he was working two jobs for a while and had to, you know, kind of drop offline there for a while. And so he is now officially retired from the site. And, you know, the door is wide open for him to come back at some point. But that's pretty much where that is. He's just not writing for us anymore.
Traditionally, we haven't really given goodbyes, you know, public goodbyes to people when they leave the staff because it's always under various circumstances. Sometimes we just can't find them anymore. Sometimes people just kind of disappear and it's like, you know, we don't know if they're coming back. And that's the other thing. Sometimes people leave the site and they come back and then we'd look kind of dumb if we had given them this grand exit. And you know, that happened with John, it happened with David Trammell and various other people over the years. So
and sometimes they retire and don't leave.
Yeah. That's the funny thing. I almost did get a big goodbye thing, but I tried to make it clear to people that I wasn't going anywhere, but I still got there were a lot of messages that kind
Can't
of...
Don't take a hint, I don't
yeah. Go away.
Yeah. So anyway, we definitely wish Steven the best. So Greg has the next one.
All right, this is from David, a.k.a. Kraken613.
Kraken.
And right, so, have any of you gotten a DSi? What are your thoughts on it so far? I got one and I love it so far. Just little things that make it nice. Also, have you heard what's the best DSi wear out there? So, John, I believe you are the sole... owner of a DSi here, and you have been practically overflowing with impressions.
Hey, John, when are you going to contribute to the DSi features?
I don't know. Why don't you ask me?
Hey, John, contribute to the DSi feature that was your idea.
Well, James, as features editor, you should tell me what you want.
Everything. No. Right now.
So yeah, John, have you actually experimented with it very much, or is it just really?
Actually, I was just playing Ease on it in Chinatown Wars. I'm actually really impressed with it. I mean, it is. I was actually surprised at how much better, first off, the interface is. I mean, it really feels like a handheld Wii.
The new front end, right?
It's
sort of Wii style channels.
It is a lot better. I mean, it pretty much is. It's very much a handheld Wii now. I mean, it does everything. Actually, tonight, one of the things I forgot to mention in new business was I downloaded off of the. I just was checking out the DSi shop. There hasn't really been anything on there that, you know, hasn't been covered on the site that's really too interesting. I mean, they have like a whole bunch of little mini games and stuff, but
you've actually literally like little bits of old games.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whether it be that magic game, was it called again?
Master of Illusion.
Master of Illusion. Thank you. It's got a different name here, so it's tough for me to remember. I think it's Magic Made Fun.
Yeah. Well, what's
You've got that, you've got bits from WarioWare, you've got then these like stripped down versions of games.
But then
like
you've actually got WarioWare in there.
Yeah, WarioWare Snapped.
Which we didn't cover very favorably, and that's broadly reflected elsewhere.
Yeah.
With WarioWare Snapped. So, I mean, there's not a lot like. There's a couple of art style games. Japan has a lot more of them currently.
Yeah, the one thing I did download was Dr. Mario Express. And the interesting thing about it, I mean, it is literally, I mean, it completely follows the theme of all the others. I mean, it is literally one player, just that's game it. Stripped down. That's it. There's nothing else to it.
There's not. Do they not even have the? Do they not even have the Virus Buster mode like that was in the Brain Age?
No. Nope.
Which was adapted into Dr. Mario for Wii.
Yeah.
Because that's good,
ridiculous.
Actually.
That is
ridiculous.
Yeah, it is just a one-player game from what I can see. I mean, I'm going to go back and play it again some more tonight, but...
That's accurate, John. Trust me. Yeah. It absolutely is. So, no multiplayer, no Virus Buster, and it's 500 points.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of, you know...
Rip-off.
I thought they could have done some more with that.
I wonder if they just stripped code out of, like, Nintendo Puzzle Collection off GBA or, you know, or not GBA, but GameCube, something like that.
It may well have been a very, very simple repurposing, I would have thought, but in terms of the best DSiWare out there, I get the stuff that's been
Aquios.
Most favorably received
Aquia,
is
yeah.
Yeah, the art style stuff that we've got. So you've got Aquia?
Yeah,
something.
It's called
like
different stuff in different regions. Like it's called Aquite somewhere, and but anyway, it's vaguely watery wherever. Which is
that sounds really British.
Maybe Aquite. It is Aquite, but it's the Mats 3 puzzle game. Which of a sort, but it's a little unorthodox, and that's got some decent. And then there's the code one about numbers. I mean, in Japan they've got quite a few more. Pico Pict, which is this sort of quite strange puzzle game where you assemble pixel art. Basically, it's quite. I can't really explain it adequately, but there's been lots of good sort of vibes about those simple games, little games, but good and sort of unique. So
and
that's
new.
Probably the most. Yeah, it's original, not literally just stripped out of other games. So that seems.
I just feel bad
for
the early adopters who primarily got a DSi because of the promise of the store and the the original games.
Yeah, I've got a wait and see policy on that.
Those things will come.
Yeah,
but for the early adopters, it's just been ugly so far.
Yeah, there really is nothing out there that's really worthwhile.
When a feature is like, really kind of like one of the primary reasons that you buy a system, and then it doesn't really get going until much later, I think that's very disenchanting.
But don't you find that the peculiar element of that is that you had this lead-in time from Japan where there was a build-up of games that were then available...
They were already
done in Japan, and nothing on DSiWare is going to take extensive localization. And they had long enough as it was. And so they could have led with, you know, more of the art style games are already, more of everything is already there. But instead, they've stuck to the drip, drip, drip of, you know, one or two every week. So it's interesting that they've, you know, stuck to that.
Point to make there, Excitebots.
Oh, you mean the localization? But no, I don't think it is anything to do with localization. I think what it's to do with is this idea. They obviously have this idea of, like, how they want to manage the flow of games. Yeah. And they're like, we are not going to do some sort of launch day dump of a bunch of games to get people excited. We are going to do it very slowly. I don't really see the wisdom of that, but you know, clearly they believe in it for some reason.
Yeah, I'm just surprised that they didn't really ship it with a killer app. You know,
the question is there ever going to be one? You know, because WiiWare on their end, it has yet to happen. You know, so there's a lot of nice things on WiiWare for, you know, that Nintendo have kind of backed, like I think Maboshi and the Art Style games and but in terms of, you know,
app from Nintendo.
No, that's very, very true. But yeah, I'm very pleased with it so far.
You're pleased with the hardware and the firmware and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think if you're happy with your DS Lite at this point, I don't think there's enough new stuff there to really warrant an upgrade. The camera, I mean, I'll probably never use the camera. I mean, I have no reason to.
Yeah.
You're taking pictures of yourself right now, aren't you, John?
Dude, shut up. You know I am.
Not with his DSi. He needs the full resolution
for what I'm doing.
Take it all in.
For what I'm doing, I need a zoom lens, a wide lens, I should say.
It's got megapixels coming out of the wide lens.
Oh, I didn't want to go. I did not want to go there.
Yeah, I just did.
What you guys don't know is Lindemann actually has a live webcam show while he records us.
Which explains everything about his connection.
I just don't think that there's really enough right now. I mean, until the DSi where stuff really gets rolling. I mean, you have like an SD card slot, but you can't really use it for anything.
Yeah, well, right now it does. I mean, that I hope that will be fixed, but right now, I mean, do you need it fixed? You're not going to download everything, and they're all tiny anyway.
Yeah.
So
not a priority at the moment, but it will become a problem eventually.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with all the stuff out for, but I mean, I guess the one thing is like, what you wonder how much they're going to have, like, you know, maybe DSi specific game cards or enhanced DSi game cards, you know.
Well, Ubisoft is that cooking game that they have. If you play it in a DSi, you get like more recipes. Now, that is the worst idea I've ever heard.
That is bizarre. Oh, why? God. That would be impossibly cynical for Nintendo to do.
Quite simply, not only cynical, but ignorant.
But hilarious.
Think about the market for that game. For their cooking thing. I mean, those people don't have a DSi yet. And it's completely insane. Especially, why would a third party do it? I mean, are they trying to promote DSi hardware sales?
I just don't get it.
Maybe you have to take pictures of your food to do the recipe.
Yeah, certain recipes, they require you to be visible to the game.
You're not stirring fast enough!
The wording in the press release basically says it just unlocks more recipes. I mean,
it's lame.
Completely insane decision.
But, yeah, I mean, I guess one of the most attractive hardware features on the DSi, actually, from my experience of taking a DS Lite around, is the fact that you can adjust the brightness on the fly.
Yeah.
Because you could only adjust the brightness on the front end, which was with a DS Lite. So once you were in a game, it was fixed.
Yeah.
Which, you know, could be problematic for a number of reasons. For instance, you know, if the sun comes out from behind a cloud, which it occasionally does in Great Britain, then you will notice that, you know, what you thought was bright enough before isn't bright enough anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or like if you had it on a really high brightness, then you're kind of wasting battery power you don't need. It's sort of going in reverse. So that's cool. And like even the Micro had that. So I never really understood why the DS Lite didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of makes it easier to port around, like, you know, if you're going to use it in public.
Well, it is definitely superior hardware in many ways. I mean, probably my favorite thing is being able to like back out of the game to the main menu instead of having to turn it off.
Having to switch it off. Yeah.
Yep. That's really handy.
It's a small thing, but you know, it's one of those things that makes a difference.
Yep, and you can hot swap games too.
I think we'll hear a lot of new stuff for DSi at E3.
I think so too.
Yeah. I don't know if it'll be entirely DSiWare, or maybe they'll announce some games that, you know, actually have reasonable uses for, you know, having a DSi mode or something. Yeah. But I think we'll hear more about it. For right now, it's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty tough deal, I think. But yeah, we'll see. All right, so the next letter is from Random Flashbang, who writes, I just finished listening to your Metroid retrospective, and I must give you congratulations for completely sidestepping the very existence of Metroid Prime Hunters. You are welcome.
Yeah, there's not much trace of the legacy of Super Metroid in that game.
No, there's not. All right, continuing the letter. Also, your speculation about Super Metroid being a sort of reimagining of the original game led me thinking about another upcoming Wii title that I'm personally looking forward to, Silent Hill Shattered Memories. Have any of you looked into the wild concepts that are going into this? I'm particularly curious about how the developers are going to make a seemingly non-existent combat system and shifting unpredictable locations actually work in a gameplay and storytelling sense. Anywho, thanks for a consistently great program. You have helped to significantly shorten a great number of solitary night shifts at Kinko's. Well, Silent Hill Shattered Memories, what do you guys think about this?
I'm kind of enthused by it on a number of levels. I mean, I've never played Silent Hill, but it kind of seemed more like the kind of horror game that would appeal to me rather than some others. And, yeah, the whole idea of kind of, you know, stripping out the combat, I think it could definitely be a good idea from the point. We talked about it in the past, you know, this idea of like, well, if you have combat in there, does it almost have to be a bit clunky because, you know, you don't want to feel like some, you know, sort of superpower badass taking down enemies, because then it wouldn't be very scary. So, you know, maybe the easiest answer to that question is just to get rid of it. Yeah, make it more like an adventure game. And kind of, you know, if you think about what we talked about with Eternal Darkness as well, you know, like the combat in that was pretty good. But maybe if they did a sequel, you know, you could more go this route, you know, with a sort of a more adventure game style. And so as long as there's enough gameplay in substitute for that in terms of puzzle solving first, and then evasion of the enemies and things like that, then I think it's fine. I think it's good, and it could really more meaningfully differentiate it as a horror game.
Well, I mean, especially in that genre where everything's been done before in that genre. I mean, it's kind of asking for some sort of innovation like that, or at least a different direction like that.
I think it's a very cool idea. Like Greg, I'm curious to see how they pull it off, because I think it's, you know, to build a game like that with no combat is almost unheard of in gaming. And I think it's a really interesting challenge. I think it can be done. I don't know if this game will be the one to do it, but I'm very interested to see if it works out. You know, I think people are excited about this for a number of reasons, but you know, certainly the whole pointing your flashlight around with a Wii remote and the fact that it's apparently has very nice graphics, those things are interesting to me as well, although, you know, less unique among the Wii library that you have things like that. But my enthusiasm for the game is very much tempered by the fact that it's also coming out on PS2 and PSP. And supposedly the Wii version is the lead SKU in the parlance of our industry. But that kind of, you know, hedging your bets with other platforms that are, I mean, really don't have that much in common with Wii. You know.
Well, you wouldn't have thought. I mean, as you say, it's interesting. On the one hand, you're going to say, well, the game's all about kind of immersion, right? You know, with the flashlight and all that. And then, you know, there's not going to be any combat in it. And you're taking that to the PSP. I mean, there doesn't really seem to be that much fun there, but to be had, to be honest. But I kind of feel like it probably is the case that those versions are very much going to be, you know, a bit of a joke, to be honest, but they probably think that because they've done Silent Hill Origins on PSP and things, that there will be a certain amount of a fan base that could just help subsidize the Wii game, essentially.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it is a nonsense that there are, in a sense, in a non-commercial sense, it is a nonsense to have a PS2 and a PSP version. But in the end, we might actually be the beneficiaries of that on this one.
Could be. I've never played a Silent Hill game. I've come close a couple times. For like Silent Hill 2, I think, is usually considered the best. Those games came out so long ago at this point that it would probably be difficult for me to go back and really take it on its own terms, mm-hmm. because I don't have, sure. Memories of it. So, and I hear it compared a lot to like the original Resident Evil games, but honestly, I very much disliked Resident Evil until 4. And I played a lot of 1 and 2. I just really did not like them, and so
the big difference, I think, is in the kind of the nature of the horror involved, isn't it? From mm-hmm. the point of view that it's more disturbing than zombified, spring-loaded cats. There are kind of personal, emotional elements to the story that are kind of disturbing, and other elements of the imagery is kind of more artistically disturbing rather than just that's disgusting. So it does seem like the gameplay is probably not dissimilar at all, but maybe it was more forgivable in that context. But now it seems like hopefully they're gonna resolve that with some real sort of coherence to it by stripping out the combat and kind of conceding that's not what this game is about at all.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm interested. But, 2009 is looking like the year of horror games for Wii. There's a shitload of stuff coming out in that genre.
I'm not sure how many of them are actually going to be, real solid horror games versus games that are kind of themed as a horror game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, there's the Grudge, which was recently announced. I don't know if it's coming out this year. Fatal Frame in Europe at some point.
In Europe.
Maybe. And
maybe. It doesn't really look good for it, to be honest. It's very odd. As we've
Cursed Mountain, from what I've seen on the Nintendo channel, I do not want to play it.
Mm-hmm.
It's out there. It's a cool premise, but the footage they showed looked so bad. They provided that footage to Nintendo for public consumption. It looked so
guys,
bad.
Look at this.
Dead Space know whether that's going to be more towards the horror end. Mm-hmm. I don't see it being like really like House of the Dead or anything. I think that's kind of how they're going to do it. Is more on the scary end, which. Obviously, it'll be more like a theme park ride scary than Silent Hill. But
Right, and that's what I mean. I think a lot of these are going to be more...
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, James. I think that's the thing about Silent Hill. Could actually be like more legitimate in that case.
All right, so James has the next letter.
So, Austin writes, "Here's my dilemma. I recently played through the majority of Ocarina of Time, and I'm eager to see what Nintendo has in store for the next Wii Zelda game. But with the possibility of this new game being released in the next year or two, is it worth my time to go back and play Twilight Princess, which I had never played?" No, you just played it. It's called Ocarina of Time.
It depends on the cost. To Austin, in terms of how cheaply you can pick up Twilight Princess.
I think it's still
surely it's cheap now.
It's probably one of these things where it is full price at certain places, but you can probably find it decent here, there, at certain times, dependent on whatever. It depends whether you're happy buying a used game. There's plenty of permutations, but just having got that out of the way, it is similar to Ocarina of Time, but, it is not the same game.
Yeah,
certainly not.
Plenty to differentiate.
I don't know if it's something you would want to play back-to-back, though, because
would have thought some sort of healthy amount of spacing would be a good idea, because that's generally what we're used to with Zeldas, and, because we play them when they come out, mm-hmm. and that seems like a pretty good way to go.
They're not the same game. They flip the map, so Death Mountain's on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's required reading, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, you could definitely do without Twilight Princess. Now, what I would suggest, and I adamantly think that you must play this game, is you must play Wind Waker.
You must play Majora's Mask.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think Majora's Mask. If you're going to play one really close afterwards, play Majora's Mask. Mm-hmm. Because, it is actually the sequel to it.
But it's not on Virtual Console here.
And it's very different.
But it will be very shortly.
It's imminent.
It will be, A, because it's out everywhere else. B, because everyone thinks it's going to be the 300th game, which you're like 2 weeks away from. And for the record, fun fact, right when it hits 300 in the US, it will hit 450 in Japan. So that's 3-2.
Jesus.
But they're all Mahjong.
It's all 150 mahjong.
They are
games.
So not all mahjong.
Panel to
There's
pawn
a lot
games.
Of strategy RPGs.
So I definitely second what you guys say about Wind Waker and Majora's Mask, and I would also say, when you get ready to try Twilight Princess, I do think you should play it eventually. I mean, I gave it a 10. I like it, obviously. It's not perfect by any means. That doesn't even mean anything. But I would say, I'm assuming that you played Ocarina of Time on Wii, which is fine on Virtual Console. But I would say, if you're tracking down your own copy of Twilight Princess, you might want to consider the GameCube version. Because the only exception would be if you're playing on a widescreen TV and widescreen support is very important to you. Otherwise, you might have a better experience with GameCube because it's the same game, but the controls are probably, you know, a little more comfortable.
It depends. There's pros and cons with the controls. I hate the gesture element, especially with the shield, is dopey. But
the pointing is okay, but it's definitely not the best pointing on Wii. I mean, if you've played Metroid Prime 3...
Because I actually played through it in both versions. I have played the entire game through both. And that experience showed me that, having played the Wii version first, I missed the flexibility of being able to pull out the arrows or the hook shot and just go over. Mm-hmm. It is a balance. So, like you said, the presentation aspect, the widescreen part, if that's important to you at all, then there's that to consider too. But I mean, with Twilight Princess, yes, the art style's similar, but just more detailed, and yes, the plot is pretty fundamentally similar, but they're all kind of fundamentally similar. A lot of them are, apart from the oddball ones like Majora's Mask and Link's Awakening. But the dungeons are new,
right?
Not the same,
and that's
completely
the meat
different.
Of the game,
and they are fantastic in that game.
And the wolf stuff, I think, is really good too.
It depends what you like, because I mean, if you like the dungeons in Ocarina of Time, Wind Waker ain't gonna do it for you, probably, because there's only about five of them, and I don't think they measure up with Twilight Princess.
One is really, really good.
I still think that playing Twilight Princess right after you play Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, I would say you're still probably better off pacing yourself.
All right, so John has the last letter this week.
All right. Okay, here we go. Ryan from Anaheim, California writes, I just watched the first trailer for Red Steel 2. Good job on, what was that, Ubisoft Brazil? Or was it some Brazilian?
That was pretty, some Brazilian press event.
Yeah,
it was a leak.
That was pretty good. I just watched the first trailer for Red Steel 2, and I find it hard to believe Ubisoft used actual in-game footage. It looks like they upped the resolution past what the Wii is capable of. I'm sure the same was done for the recent batch of Spyborg's screenshots put out by Capcom. Am I just buying into the negativity surrounding Wii and doubting that anything looks good? Or am I right on the money? I haven't forgotten how the first Red Steel screenshots looked compared to the actual finished product.
The trailer videos I saw were 480p.
Mm-hmm. They also looked like cutscenes.
Graphically, they very well could have been cutscenes. I mean, maybe they can't get that out of there, but the cinematic nature of the video made it look like cutscenes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How all the moves are so orchestrated.
Yeah.
There's very little gameplay.
I don't think there was even the vaguest pretense that it was gameplay.
No.
Actual gameplay.
Was it the in-game engine?
Whether it was in-game
engine. That's the whole thing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, there is a pretense that it was gameplay, because it shows the guy doing a move, and then it's replicated on the screen.
No, that is not a pretense. Some actor titting about in his living room is not a pretense that it's gameplay.
No. But then when they flip to the screen,
it shows an action.
The guy on the screen
that's my point. When you put in that really artificial layer of, the guy's doing this, to me that just says, well, that it's not really, vaguely like gameplay at all. To me, it's like the whole thing's like a theatrical production.
Yeah, I wasn't buying it either.
It just, I recognize what you're saying. That's more sort of gameplay-ish than the main bits with the slow motion and but to me it's not like, here is a bit of the game.
It's showing the concept.
Right.
Yeah, it most of it seemed like concept art, really, didn't it?
Yeah.
I do think that by moving to cel-shaded graphics, they can make it look better than they can if they go for realistic graphics.
Well, that's the main thing to take in terms of encouragement, is it just looks like the style, the direction is positive.
But, you can do more in cel-shading with less power. Because you're not worried about
it. In terms of just how attractive it looks.
Yeah, and you can make things look sharper, cel-shaded, because you don't have to worry about rounding and you know, texture mapping and stuff. So it's a lot simpler. Yeah.
So, I mean, especially with what happened with the first Red Steel, I think, you know, a healthy dose of skepticism is fine.
Mm-hmm. This game has been in development for a long time, we believe.
Yeah, they supposedly went back to the drawing board once Motion Plus came into the works.
So we can say that it's probably... The original Red Steel was probably more rushed than this game, I hope.
Oh yeah,
substantially more rushed.
I would have thought so. Yeah.
So,
but I mean, you've got Motion Plus in there, which, you know, the thing is about the whole Red Steel concept, you know, with the sword fighting and everything, is like that was a concept for stuff that we couldn't do yet.
Yeah,
you know, so and now it can.
Or as Johnny calls it, clean steel.
Yeah,
yeah. I still have a lot of problems with the, you know, the name, and I just tend to think that a game about swordplay specifically should probably have some level of blood.
You know, yeah. I don't have any problem without blood, but the fact that it's called Red Steel is funny.
Yeah.
It's funny. I mean, yeah.
It doesn't bother me. I just think it's hilarious.
Well, there's this Clint Eastwood sort of rip-off character that you've got going around.
Yeah, I don't like
He is actually a communist. So.
And, there you go.
And the funny thing is that, you know, they're actually perpetuating the joke by naming it Red Steel 2, which is an interesting market choice. I mean, yes, the game sold well, but game sold well, but I tend to think that just means that even more people know how bad it was. And
you know, I think how, quote, bad Red Steel was is overstated. Red Steel was thoroughly mediocre.
It was on Broken Pixels, dude.
There it is. That's the gold standard.
I don't think it was a terrible game.
It's on there with Wirehead.
I think it just, you know, I think mainly like the sort of rickety-ness of the controls.
Yeah,
you know,
I think it just didn't
really work. You know, like it's such a fundamental thing. Whereas, you know, you'd hope if this game's going to deliver that this is going to really show how well Wii Motion Plus works. So, I mean, do you think they're going to really push that angle hard in the marketing? Almost like a concession of like, yeah, it didn't work before, but it does this time, honest. You know?
I think they'll push it more like, look how great this works, but they won't be like, look how bad it didn't work before. I think they'll just be like, they'll just hype up that it's like the best use of motion controls to date, and that's all they'll say. Mm-hmm. They won't say, especially compared to what we did.
Well, I guess the most interesting thing about it, relative to the other Motion Plus games that are in the pipeline, is that this is said to be exclusively Motion Plus. There is no mode where you use it with the normal control, you know, with the normal Wii Remote. So, unlike Tiger Woods and Virtua Tennis and Grand Slam Tennis, all that, all can be played with the Wii Remote, as is, you know, so that's the part. Obviously, Wii Sports Resort, you can't, but that's padded in, you know. So it's quite interesting that they feel it confident in, you know, you've got to be confident enough in the user base of Wii Motion Plus that this is, you know, going to sell.
Yeah, well, this should come with a pack in.
Yeah, it probably will.
Yeah.
Still, it would help, you know, if people don't have to make that extra investment just to play it from their point of view.
Sure. In fact, I would almost guarantee this will pack in a Motion Plus, because from everything we can tell, it actually requires Motion Plus.
Quite is it, yeah.
And then you've got things like Grand Slam Tennis, which don't require Motion Plus, and yet they're still bundling it. Yeah. So,
in Europe. I don't think they're actually bundling it in America.
But they're bundling it with Tiger Woods in America, which is also
which
optional.
Is the same principle. Yeah. Well, no, exactly.
Well, Ubisoft also seems to be a big partner with Nintendo on the Wii.
Well, yes and no.
More so than other companies.
Yeah.
Like, they've been there right from the start. They supported it heavily from a launch. Not many other companies.
Ubisoft had the Wii Wheel before the Wii Wheel existed. Remember?
Yeah, they had that styrofoam things. Sweetness. I'm telling you.
On the subject of Spyborgs, has it struck anyone else that that's basically gone through exactly the same process as Jet Force Gemini?
Yes.
Gemini had these like really, you know, kiddie looking character designs,
and then they had the first known instance of boob jiggle.
And then they kind of, aged them up a little, like not really that much, like made their costumes darker. Like, you know, it's pretty much seems like that's what they've done with Spyborgs.
Well, you know, what worries me about Spyborgs is that, all right, so they had a game that the reason it caught flack before was it just didn't look like it was ready to be shown publicly. You know, it wasn't that people were like, oh, well, this game looks kiddie. It was that it looked like it wasn't ready to be shown.
And the thing was, I'm not sure that they really ever showed Spyborgs last year. I mean, I think there was some kind of trailer that came out.
Yeah, there was a trailer.
It was, I'm pretty sure it was never playable.
It was just off of that one trailer that was very Saturday morning cartoonish.
Yeah, but maybe that's it though. Maybe it was so early that, you know, what you're taking to be sort of changes that are sort of reactionary and in fact just the development process.
I don't know, man. The thing is the character models, they were just, I mean, when you watch those trailers back to back, you're like, "Oh my god, they completely just they just put it in like the they put all those characters in the badass machine just to make them look tougher and cooler. Like it seems so artificial."
Game, like, it got pulled back due to the bad response.
I mean, I don't know, maybe.
I have a feeling there was a lot more to it. I mean, I know they're saying that. Capcom is being like, we heard the reaction from the fans. First of all, there are no Spyborg fans, okay? The game existed a year ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were concerned about some certain responses, whatever. But, look, it doesn't take a year to redo character designs. There was more going on, and, you know, it actually gives me hope that it might actually be a good game because it had a whole extra year in development.
Well, isn't it like a sort of co-op brawler, basically?
So? Yeah, you know, I think there's some platforming.
I think it's quite funny, actually, because, like, co-op is like a big thing in Brawlers. So we've had No More Heroes and Mad World, and neither of them had it. So it's kind of a gap.
Be really cool. It really could.
Well, the thing is, I think Johnny's absolutely right when he says that there's more stuff going on, because if you watch that original trailer, there were actually five characters, and now there's only three. So there was definitely some design, you know, retooling at the very least.
Maybe they put those guys in the badass machine and nothing came.
Yeah, I guess so. It's just very funny it's very humorous when you watch those trailers back to back, because it's just like, it's like they took the flack from every single internet, you know, nerd rage, and did exactly what they said they wanted.
Yeah, it is.
Which
it
scares me, to be honest, because that just tells me that somebody basically didn't want to stick by their vision of the game. You know?
Well, but their vision was so, you know, cheesy, market-driven, focus-tested bullshit to begin
with. Well, but the thing is, you know what I'm saying, though? If somebody really believed in it and said, well, you know, fuck you. I don't care what you say about this game. It's going to be good. You know?
It was explicitly a Saturday morning cartoon concept. Like, they would actually have, like, you know, commercial breaks.
Exactly.
And, you know, all that. Yeah. So it just seems like they've kind of maybe soured on that whole idea.
Well, it just seemed to me like a really blatant thing where, like, they actually wanted to launch a real cartoon with it and action figures. And it's just one of those things where, you know, it's like, it, you know, when it's like announcing a trilogy before the first game comes out. It's like coming out with Dead Space and saying, well, we're doing a comic book and a TV show and a movie and a bunch of sequels.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, let me play the first game and see if it's good, and then I'll care about all those other things.
Well, but I mean, you know, something like, you know, I mean, granted, like, you know, the people behind it don't have the same pedigree. But, you know, it's like when I think of something like Wind Waker got a whole lot of flack when it came out for pretty much the same kind of thing, right? That's too kiddy, that's too that. Well, you know.
And they added eyebrows.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean.
They took a year off, it went dark, and it came back, and Link had eyebrows, and everybody was cool.
But, you know, my point is that, you know.
That is what happened.
But, you know, they said, look, this is what we're going to do, and it's going to be good. We're going to make sure it's good. And if, you know, you don't believe us now, you will when it comes out.
And they saved the capitulation for the next game.
Yep.
That's right.
Yep. And they did that with Wii Music, too. So we're going to have to wrap this up. I've got to get to a midnight showing of Star Trek. And so I definitely want to thank these guys. Thank all of you for sending in your great letters. You can send new letters to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And before we go, I just want to comment, hopefully you are hearing some brand new music on the show this week. Jason Ricci and New Blood have put out a new album. It's called Done With The Devil. And once again, we are stealing a lot of little clips out of it. Not stealing, I have permission. But we are using some of their clips. And so hopefully it gives the show a little bit of a fresh sound. And hopefully it's something that you'll like and that we'll keep up with for a while. So if you like this music, if you like the show, I would definitely encourage you to support it and go out and look for this album. It should be in your local record store. It's definitely on iTunes, and I'll have a link to where you can find it in the weekly article. It's good shit. I've been listening to it for about a month now. It's really good. Also, I would encourage you to check jasonricci.com for tour dates, because it is they are a really, really fantastic live band. I've been trying to get Carl to go for a while, but he doesn't have a car. So anyway, if you are in the touring area of this band, it's really worth your time to go check them out. And yeah, I think that's all we've got. So on behalf of James, John, and Greg, this is your host, Jonathan Metz, saying farewell until next week. Bye-bye.
His name is Belgian, but oh God, no, oh Jesus, oh God, I did a Google search, oh dear God.
On what, James?
On Jean-Claude Van Damme, see where he was actually born, and I got that. Oh, oh my God.